It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster
conquered the street.
We like fighting a woman.
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Fight me.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 624 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off. Here, the first sound off of the month of November. November 3rd, 2019. I am the Solid Monster, and I am excited because this month marks 12 years since I began this podcast. The actual anniversary falls on next weekend, but we're celebrating all month long, and I want to thank each and every person listening who has ever taken the time to listen to the show, to donate to the show, post a comment, send a question in. Everybody who has helped make this thing a rousing success and a very big part of my life, bigger than I ever thought it would be, I just want to say thank you. Can't believe it's been this long, but we're gonna have a good time all month long in the month of November. And this is also pretty exciting. I've been waiting for this. You guys hear me talk about Audible every single week. They've been a great partner to the podcast now, actually for a number of years. And you guys can get a free trial of the service and one free audiobook. You hear me talk about it every week. But this is pretty cool. So if you have been sleeping on this Audible trial, if you have not yet taken advantage of it, I don't know what you're waiting for. Now would be a good time to do so. The time has come. Glenn Jacobs has a new book coming out called Mayor Kane, My Life in Wrestling and Politics. It's out at the end of the month. You can pre-order it, though, right now. And get the audiobook version for free as part of your 30-day trial of the Audible service. Instead of paying $30 for it, which is what it would cost you without the trial, over 7 hours of audio narrated by Kane himself. He's the one doing the narration. Now, the book is not out for a few more weeks, but if you start your trial now using our link, you always have the option of canceling if you feel the need to do so before the 30 days are up. The best part, though, is that you get to keep your free book. So you can get Mayor Kane's new book for free, and all you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/solomonster, and you can pre-order it right now for free. You can do it now. Maybe you want to wait until next week. That's entirely up to you. Just make sure that when you do, you use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. He's an impressive guy. You know, Jacobs is an impressive guy. He's had a very interesting life, to say the least. So to hear him tell that story in his own words, you know, his early career, I assume he gets into the failed gimmicks, you know, and then the Kane character. I mean, imagine the stories that this guy must have for as long as he's been around. You know, we talk about guys like The Undertaker. Oh my God, what would it be like if he ever wrote a tell-all book? And I don't know if he ever will or not. Then again, we never expected to see The Undertaker on Instagram. So it's possible one day we may get an Undertaker book. But people forget sometimes that Kane has been around, maybe not quite as long, but he's one of the long stalwarts of that company. He's been around forever. And then, of course, there's the political stuff. I mean, wherever you fall on that spectrum, when I hear him speak, he's a very smart guy. So again, the book is called Mayor Kane, My Life in Wrestling and Politics. Pre-order it now for free when you start your trial, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Spread the word, let other people know, and you help out the podcast each and every time you do so. I'm going to get to all the PayPal shouts after, and there's a lot of them to get to, but we've got this Saudi Arabia business to talk about. But before we get into all of that, I actually want to open with a note on Impact, which is rare. I know I don't cover Impact the way that I used to. But Impact Wrestling formally debuted on Access Television this past Tuesday with a steel cage main event for the Impact World title that saw Sami Callihan beat Brian Cage to win the championship. I watched the match. I also watched that segment with Ken Shamrock being introduced to Joey Ryan, who once Shamrock realized it was the penis guy, as he called him, he got all excited. I thought the cage match was good. I did watch the match. Callihan won the title off of a pile driver from the second rope. I thought for sure Cage was kicking out of that because that's all we see these days, right? It's this epidemic of people kicking out of big moves off the top rope and finishers. But he actually won with it. And then Tessa Blanchard got into the cage and she went nose to nose with Sammy. And Callahan, he hocked the loogie into the air and it landed all over his face. It's really disgusting when he does that. I cannot stand that. It's like back in the day, the headbangers used to do that shit where they would spit up into the air. I forget which headbanger it was. It was either Tweedledee or Tweedledum, whichever one it was, would spit up into the air and catch it in his mouth. Bully Ray used to do that in TNA. I always looked away. I just find that completely disgusting. But he's in the ring and he's doing that. But the one person who was happy for him, one person who was very happy to see Sami Callihan win the world title, was Tommaso Ciampa. And in a sea of negativity, and God knows there's going to be a lot of it to get into this week, but in a sea of negativity, I'm using this as my happy tweet of the week. Ciampa tweeted that he and Callahan attended the same TNA tryout many years ago. Neither of us were offered a deal. He later signed with WWE. I signed with ROH. He quit WWE. I quit ROH. We both crossed paths countless times around the world, and tonight Sammy became the Impact World Champion. And then he included a bunch of heart emojis. He was cool with everyone in House of Glory when we did stuff with him, Callahan was, although he did attack JD once, but, you know, he had it coming. Cool to see him get a chance, though, in the top spot. I assume they're building to another match with him and Tessa, which is why she came out. They had a intergender match on a pay-per-view a number of months ago that was really good. The question now is, would they put their world title, would Impact put its world championship on Tessa Blanchard? And if they did, how would you feel about that? Because I think Tessa's the real deal. It would not bother me if they actually did that. If that's what they're building to, and they eventually are going to put their world championship on Tessa, I'm okay with that. And she seems to be very popular among the, the online community and the fans in the buildings, casuals. She's, a superstar in Impact. And you can say she's a big fish in a small pond, which I think would be accurate, but she's a superstar. You know, over there, she's a rock star. I just wonder how many people, and these people are out there. I wonder how many people would pitch a fit if they did pull the trigger on that. And, when I say that these people are out there, I'm not trying to say that in a derogatory way. I just know that there would be a lot of very heated, divided opinion about it if they decided to do it. Some people just don't accept any form of intergender wrestling at all. You heard me talk about this all the time when Lucha Underground, and I loved Lucha Underground, but one of the things I did not really like about the show was how hard they went in many times on the whole one-on-one intergender stuff, like the tag matches, I didn't mind so much. And there were the exceptions. There were certain situations where I would watch it and go, hey, that wasn't bad, but it's just not my thing. But in this case, I think, if they want to do it, I think it would make all the sense in the world because of her position in the company. And I was very impressed. The last time she was in the ring with Callahan, the match they were able to pull off, I wasn't taken out of the match. It didn't come off to me as being overly unrealistic or anything like that. It was a good enough match that I kind of got lost in it. And that to me is the telltale sign of a successful match, is that you kind of just get lost in it. You believe in and buy into what's going on. And they had a hell of a match. So I'd be very curious where many of you stand on that argument, in favor of, not in favor of, and why. Hey, there were rumors back in 99 that WWE almost did the same thing with China. And I never bought into that because, Austin was the champion at the time. He was the hottest thing in wrestling. I don't think there's any way they would have put China in that position as the world champion at that time. Maybe if China were around today, she'd be the most over person in the entire company. Then I might look at it and go, you can't do much worse. But back then, with the idea of Austin and Rock and all these people, even as popular as China was, I never really bought into that. I guess they could have had Foley take the fall in like a triple threat if it was, let's say, Austin, China, and Foley at SummerSlam or something, so that way Austin doesn't have to lose straight up. But, you know, if it ever got past an initial conversation, I doubt it was ever seriously considered. But China was super popular to a much larger audience, much larger than what Impact has. So it's interesting to, I think, just see how divided the opinion is on this subject. Because it is a hot button subject, you know, in a lot of circles in wrestling. But I think, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again here, and she seems very happy and very content in Impact, and I believe she's signed with them through next summer. There were these rumors a few weeks ago that her contract was coming up with Impact. That's not true. I believe she's signed through at least half of next year. And she did an interview recently with Chris Van Vliet and seems very happy in the position that she's in. But at some point, you've got to move on to bigger and better things. Now, whether that's WWE, whether that's AEW, maybe there's some other promotion out there that can give, you know, her the spotlight and the attention that she, you know, she may want. But at some point, it's going to be Tessa and Charlotte in a main event match at WrestleMania. It's the natural match. Two daughters of two of the original Four Horsemen. Second generation, actually in Tessa's case, third generation. Both very good. I do believe it will happen one day. WWE held its Sweet Saudi Money 4 show in Riyadh this past Thursday. I have a live review of the show up right now on YouTube. I pushed it out to the feed as an extra as well. So if you were working and you missed it, or if you just don't want to watch the Saudi Blood Money shows, I got you covered. Don't worry about it. The bigger story here is that this may well end up being the last show that they do in Saudi Arabia. More on that in a minute. Highlights here, The Fiend, new Universal Champion. They're trying to fix their mistake from Hell in a Cell. He beat Seth Rollins. Seth, why are you so mean to me, Rollins? And the match itself was really nothing special. The red light, it's just to have an extended match like that in darkness with the red light. I know they're trying to go for a different feel for these matches. They've got to get rid of that light. It's the same thing with Kane back in 97. Kane had the same thing. He had the red light. People complained. It's not the sort of thing that's I think, feasible beyond a couple of matches. And they ditched it. They got rid of it. And I think the same will end up happening with The Fiend. And I hope it happens sooner rather than later because I'm just not a big fan of it. The other thing I talked about on the review and is worth mentioning here, and I'm happy that The Fiend got the championship, not that we have to go down this road to get here, and I don't think that they should be excused, nor should we forget what happened at Hell in a Cell, that they deliver that shit sandwich to us with that finish in the main event. Be that as it may, he's the champion now. There's no higher position for him on the brand for him to be in. The key is in the follow-up. What do they do with him now? That's going to be the key for him going forward. But the other consideration here is when you look at how that match played out and what it took for him to win the championship, what it took for Rollins to try to beat this guy in the match, 8 curb stomps. He took 8 curb stomps. How many did he take in the Hell in a Cell match? 11? Between the two matches, he has very likely taken close to, if not 20, curb stomps. He took about 3 sledgehammer shots to the head in this match. And I made the point, go back to the beginning of the career of The Undertaker in WWE, 1991, 1992, when he was, you know, he was like a zombie. He would no-sell everybody's offense, he would knock them down, he would get right back up. I cannot ever remember even The Undertaker taking the kind of abuse that The Fiend has taken just in these last two matches. And it poses the question, if all of these things have no effect on this guy, who can beat him? You've already completely destroyed this guy's finisher. The stomp is completely useless now. You know, he's going to use it in his future matches, and he'll beat people with one stomp. And I'll laugh every time he does it because 8 stomps. They completely killed off that as a finisher, but they've also created this unbeatable force. How can you beat this guy? What's it going to take? And everyone has their theory. Maybe it's the lights. Maybe that's why they don't want to put the lights on. If you put the lights on, I don't know how you're going to explain that one. You know, he's got, you know, his eyes hurt when you put the light on. The mask? That's a theory I could see. You know, maybe some kind of material the mask is made from. Maybe it's made out of titanium. Maybe that's why the guy could take 8 curb stomps and keep getting up from them. That at least would make sense. Kind of like that mask the Undertaker wore when he had the Phantom of the Opera mask back in the mid-90s when he had the broken orbital bone. They're going to have to come up with some kind of explanation about how and where and why he gets this power. And maybe it has to do with the mask. Maybe the idea is to get the mask off. I don't know. But they've kind of put themselves in this corner here where there's nobody on the roster right on up to Brock Lesnar who can believably beat this guy. Speaking of Brock, Brock quit on SmackDown. I'll talk about SmackDown, what a show that was. He quit the SmackDown roster on TV on Friday night to come to Monday Night Raw. He has promised to come to Raw this Monday. He's going to go hunting. He's going to go hunting. Nobody hunts like Brock Lesnar. Instead of elk or moose, he's going to be hunting for luchador like Rey Mysterio. But this paves the way now for them to swap the titles, keep The Fiend on Friday nights, and I guess not do the split personality deal where The Fiend is on Raw, Bray Wyatt is on SmackDown. I thought that might be one direction they go in. Instead, it looks like they're just going to swap the titles and move one champion to one brand and keep Bray on SmackDown, because Bray came into this match with Rollins as a SmackDown guy. Brand split. Yeah. So I guess that's how they're going to work this out. Now, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross were traded to SmackDown, if you remember, on that backstage show a few weeks ago for future considerations for Monday Night Raw. But if Brock quit, if the storyline is that Brock quit SmackDown, then there would be no need for a trade. So I don't think any of that necessarily comes into play here. Lesnar, he made short work of Cain Velasquez in the opening match. 2 minutes it went. He tapped him out with a Kimura lock. Very weird to build up a guy like Cain Velasquez these last few weeks and then have him come in and surrender in 2 minutes like that. I've heard different conflicting things that, you know, his knee is even worse off than people thought. He couldn't do much, and so that's why they kept it so brief and so simple. But again, if the guy came into it with a knee injury, it's like, why book the match in the first place? Why not just let the guy go get his knee fixed, and then you can bring him in, and you can really build him up as some kind of a killer where it'll mean something when he gets beat. This just felt like a total rush job. You know, he comes in a few weeks later, they blow the big match off with him and Lesnar, and he submits inside of 2 minutes. So that was kind of strange. The good part of it, they kept it short, because had it gone on any longer, like Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman, which I thought was shit, then this match would have been shit too. So at least they kept it short. But yeah, Tyson Fury, he got to play pro wrestler for a night. He knocked out Braun Strowman for the count-out win, so adios Braun. We had the first ever women's match in Saudi Arabia, Natty and Lacey, so that was kind of a big deal to them anyway. Now, after the show, is where the real drama began. After Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn had already supposedly flown out of Riyadh, they were already on their way back to the United States, there was said to be a mechanical issue with the charter plane that was due to take back more than the 175 people remaining in Saudi Arabia. That's a combination of staff and talent. But there was a mechanical malfunction of some kind. So they ended up sitting on the tarmac waiting for this plane to take off for 7 hours, over 7 hours. And if anybody's ever been stranded on the runway before because of a flight delay, you know how much that sucks. I can't say that I've ever been stranded for 7 hours. If I'm stranded for an hour or two, I'm freaking out. Imagine being stuck on that plane in a foreign country, you have no idea what's going on, you're tired and beat up and sore, over 7 hours of sitting there and not going anywhere. So as this is all going on, there's a small group of wrestlers that end up on a separate charter flight. Now, I don't know if this is something the wrestlers took it upon themselves to do, if WWE arranged for it. It sounds like it was something that whoever these wrestlers were, and I suspect it was the big names like Roman Reigns and people like that, decided to go ahead and charter their own flight. There were about 20 people on there, about 20 different wrestlers, and so they made it out. So this is not a situation where people were being held hostage. I mean, there were so many, you know, it can be hard sometimes to parse fact from fiction and you know, what who's telling the truth and is this story bullshit or not. Let me just say this. Nobody knows for sure yet exactly what the hell happened here. WWE side of it, And the airline side of it is it was a mechanical malfunction. That's it. Nothing to see here. But a lot of other people, including some of the wrestlers who have been communicating and sending messages to different reporters and newsletter people and things of that nature, they feel otherwise. So there's a lot of conflicting reports, and I'm going to get into it here, but just be mindful of the fact that we don't yet know 100% exactly what happened here. But there is a lot of speculation. There's a lot of stories and rumors, maybe even a few conspiracy theories tossed in here. But one thing that this was not a hostage situation. Nobody was held at gunpoint. You know, maybe there were wrestlers on the plane who didn't know what was going on. And they were scared and they felt that they were maybe being held there against their will. I don't doubt that there are wrestlers who felt that way, but there's no indication that this was any kind of you're not allowed to leave, you're not allowed to get off the plane or else. Nobody was being held at gunpoint, nobody was being held hostage, so let's just get that out first, okay? Plus, if they were being held, these 20 other wrestlers would not have been able to charter their own plane and get the hell out of there. So they took off. Now, in WWE's infinite wisdom, and they're lucky that those guys were able to take off, I guess, well, maybe it didn't matter in the end because the idea was maybe they'd make it back in time for SmackDown because they had a TV taping, a live TV show on Fox the day after. In their infinite wisdom, they decided to book a show in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, on a Thursday, and Buffalo, New York, on a Friday. That's a 20-hour flight over 6,600 miles from Riyadh to Buffalo. Not exactly a popular flight path. So the airline, Atlas Air, issued an apology for the delay. This is what they said. They said, a chartered WWE passenger flight operated by Atlas Air is currently delayed in Riyadh due to a mechanical issue. Our top priority is always to ensure that our passengers arrive safely and on time at their destination. The aircraft is being repaired and will be inspected and certified before returning to service to transport our passengers to their final destination. We regret that operational disruptions delayed the flight and apologize to our passengers who were inconvenienced. I doubt very seriously that Atlas would have copped to a mechanical failure unless there really was some kind of a mechanical problem. I fail to see what the upside would be for them to cover for WWE or to lie about the situation in some way. So I'm not doubting there was some kind of a mechanical issue that probably did occur. But that being said, there's a lot of people and a lot of wrestlers who feel there's far more to this story than just a mechanical issue. And I did see the video where I couldn't understand a word he was saying, so I had to rely on a translation. But former WWE Spanish language announcer Hugo Savinovich recorded a video in Spanish. He still has a lot of sources in the company. He worked there for, so many years. And people translated the video and what he was saying, and yeah, he was claiming that he heard from sources within WWE that the company still has not been paid. Or at least up until the day of this Saudi show that just took place last week, they had not yet been paid on the last Saudi show. At least the last one, if not the last two. So we're talking tens of millions. Some people have said hundreds of millions. We're at least talking tens of millions of dollars that WWE had still supposedly not received for at least the last show, which would have been Super Showdown in June. And so what ended up happening here is that Vince McMahon decided to retaliate, supposedly, as the story goes, by cutting the live feed in Saudi Arabia at the start of the show. And there are reports that for people who were watching live, whatever the local channel was that they were watching the show on there, obviously on the WWE Network, it aired fine. There were no issues, there were no delays. But over there, there were some reports and tweets from people suggesting that the show did not start airing until about an hour or two after its originally scheduled airtime. So there could very well be truth to the idea that Vince McMahon said, listen, you know, they're pulling a power play on us here. We need to get paid, or we need to know that we're going to get paid. Cut the feed until we resolve this. If this is true, and that's a big if. I'm not saying Hugo's lying, although he could be getting bad information. But if this is true, Think about this. This is a government run by a crown prince who ordered a man to be killed and dismembered for speaking out against him and his regime. I hardly think it would be a bright move to cut the feed to the live show when you've got almost 200 of your own employees, or I'm sorry, independent contractors, in that country working a show. That would be idiotic. But we know the almighty dollar is all that matters to this man, so it wouldn't be, it would be hardly a surprise. Not a very smart move, though, if that's what happened. So, if that's the case, then as the story goes, the Crown Prince was angered, and you know, the people of the Sports Authority who helped organize this whole deal with WWE. They have this Saudi Sports Authority, which really is, it's the government. I mean, let's just call it what it is. They weren't very happy about that. And they decided to fuck with the wrestler's travel plans. I'm not saying they physically they went under the plane and started cutting wires and shit, but they, you know, look, if they wanted to, believe me, they can ground that plane and cause a lot of headaches for a lot of people, and there's a lot of people who believe that's exactly what may have happened here. Now, if they're having trouble getting paid, or if they're being paid late, you know, by the Saudis, I don't see how they can be trusted. How do you move forward with this deal and risk another episode like this from happening? If you're one of the wrestlers who got stuck in the middle of all this nonsense because of a money issue that you had absolutely nothing to do with, you're like a pawn in a chess game here. How are you going to risk this, you know, repeating itself again in the future? You're supposed to do this twice a year for the next 16 years. Oh my God, 16 years. 8 years. 16 shows. Can you imagine 16 years of this shit? 8 years is long enough. I don't see how you can work with a partner like that and continue on if this is what's going on. Now, to make matters worse, there's a lot of resentment within the company, supposedly, as far as Vince McMahon is concerned, because Vince McMahon, the perception is that he left them high and dry. He got on his plane and he headed home while all of this other nonsense was going on. It's very possible that he didn't know that. When he stepped onto the plane and he took off, they had no idea that this was happening. They had no idea there was a mechanical issue and the plane was grounded. We don't know. We don't know what his knowledge was or wasn't before he took off. I would like to think that he wouldn't have left knowing that, hey, there's a problem brewing here. You better stick around. At the same time, you got SmackDown the next day, and him and Kevin Dunn are on the same flight, and they're probably like, well, we got to get to SmackDown. Maybe they did take off knowing that there was shit going down. We don't know. But there's a lot of wrestlers very resentful who are looking at Vince McMahon in a very different light after this episode. The optics of this are terrible. And so it's not surprising that you have a lot of wrestlers right now who are very unhappy with Vince McMahon. Wrestlers who have lost a lot of respect for him. As they were stuck and stranded there, he was already well on his way home. This whole thing is a total nightmare. A total nightmare. That is a long enough flight just to get there. Then to wrestle, then get on a plane and sit there for 7 hours, not moving. You're tired, you're sore, you're beat up, you're away from your family, you're away from your kids on Halloween. There were a bunch of wrestlers posting pictures of their kids in their Halloween costumes. They were very depressed. They had to be away for that. You're trying to get out of this foreign country. Now, eventually they got out of there 12 hours later, or whatever it was. Their charter finally landed at JFK Airport here in New York. Yesterday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, but Raw is in New York tomorrow night, so I would imagine that a lot of the talent may have just opted to stay in New York rather than fly home, unless they live close to New York. You know, if you live in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, then yeah, you can go home. But what sense would it make if you're scheduled to be on Raw Monday night at the Nassau Coliseum, and you fly into New York on a Saturday afternoon? What are you going to do? You're going to fly to California for not even a day? That doesn't make any sense. So you probably have a lot of wrestlers who still haven't been home, and they're sitting in a hotel somewhere right now, after everything that they had to go through on this trip. Some of the talent did try flying home, and they got fucked, because they encountered even more flight delays out of New York, which is not a surprise. I say that as a New Yorker. They had trouble getting home because they missed their connecting flights in Atlanta. And get this, And get this, the crew leaves for a European tour this week. Kicks off in Brighton, England, then they go to Manchester, Leeds, Aberdeen, and Glasgow. Then they come right back and they go to SmackDown in Philadelphia. And this is all after having just come back from a tour of Australia. Let us not forget that. That was the tour where Xavier Woods tore his Achilles. What a glamorous life. Sure makes that union that FS1 reporter was asking Bailey about sound pretty appealing, doesn't it? Imagine being one of those 175 people sitting on that plane. You're not taking off. Hours have gone by with no explanation, or you're told of a mechanical issue that apparently a lot of them didn't even buy into. But you're sitting there 6,000 miles away from home. You don't know what the fuck is going on. So many wrestlers were feeding different stories and messages to Meltzer and Keller and Alvarez and Sean Ross Sapp. Look, I was on Wade Keller's show live on Friday night after SmackDown. And before we went live, he was telling me about some of the messages that he was getting from some of the talent. And it's absolutely ridiculous that they had to go through what they went through. And you're sitting there in Saudi Arabia, of all places. Imagine the thoughts going through their heads, not knowing why they're not being allowed to fly out of there. And their dear leader is already on another plane halfway home. Now, these are human beings. They're not cattle. What genius thought it would be a good idea to have the Thursday before a live Fox show in Buffalo as a good time for a live pay-per-view in Riyadh? They're scheduled to have 16 more of these shows on the remaining 8 years of what is believed to be a 10-year deal. And if the money story turns out to be even remotely true, I mean, there's a lot of different stories where the money is concerned. You know, one version of events from The Observer is that they were only paid, I think it was something like $60 million deposited into their account. They were only paid on the morning of Crown Jewel. That they were paid, but that's how late they got paid for that last show. It was the morning of Crown Jewel last week. All of a sudden, the money was deposited. If this is going to continue to go on or they're not paying, you know, what they said they're going to pay, or they're not paying on time, and all these different things are going on, why in the hell are they sending these people over there? And to be honest, even if the money story isn't true, you could ask that same question. Now, what's even worse is that all of this seems to have created some kind of friction among members of the locker room, not just anger at the company and anger at Vince McMahon, but friction amongst members of the roster. Luke Harper and Curtis Axel were among those tweeting about not being part of the, quote, top 20 who were able to charter a plane out of there while everybody else was stuck on the tarmac. Harper said, well, I guess I didn't want it enough to pay for my own charter, but I'm home now. Hashtag not top 20. Axel tweeted, he goes, not top 20. And then he used the middle finger emoji. And he included a picture of himself at home kissing his daughter. He said, I'm number one at home. We don't leave each other behind. A very telling line there in that tweet. They're like soldiers on the battlefield. Never leave a man behind. Carl Anderson said, looking forward to seeing who the locker room leader is on Monday. And then he put a popcorn emoji in there. See, this is what happens in 2019. This is how wrestlers communicate, unlike 20 or 30 years ago. You know, they'd get into bar fights, and the way they would communicate was probably just to beat the shit out of each other. Now they use emojis on social media to get their point across. But you read these tweets, and it was very clear that there is a lot of angst and a lot of bitterness, even from within. This could be creating tension from within. The last thing they need is a divided locker room or some kind of locker room rebellion. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. Who knows what's going to happen? When they get to the building on Monday night at the Nassau Coliseum, it's going to be very interesting to follow along if there's any backstage stories once everybody is back in the same place on Monday night to see if there's any fallout from this. But this Saudi deal feels like it may be falling apart, and they're only four shows in. Good luck with the other 16. I can't wait for Sweet Saudi Money 5. Where's my money? If you'd like to become a PayPal VIP for the podcast, you can always do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. Want to say thank you here to all of our VIPs this week. The Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Pull No Punches Alan Ragasa, who says, be careful and don't burn yourself out with all of the content lately. Well, you know what, brother? I've been burning the candle at both ends for a while. three hours of sleep every night, sadly, is becoming the norm when you juggle two jobs 7 days a week. So this Jericho cruise in January cannot come soon enough, but thank you. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Steven Handyman, Halistic, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Killshot, Keith Hart, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, Josh the Shooter Stockton, Super Jock, Michael Cochran, Steve the Sully Monster, O'Sullivan. Lee, and actually, you know, the other thing is, 3 hours of sleep on most nights, and I don't drink coffee. So I've had these discussions with the people in my office many times. They say, how do you function? How do you function on 2 or 3 hours sleep and no coffee? I said, I don't know. I just think coffee is gross. I think it's disgusting. Never liked coffee. Anyway, Lee Hired Gun Hieronics, who wants you to support Mr. Beast and his tree planting efforts by donating to teamtrees.org. So you can donate there. The Chicago Screamer, Ian Noel Camelotes, the Maniac Moderator, Jeff Lippman, and the Mississippi Mauler, Cameron Tipton. Also, Wrestling with Johnners, John Scott. His Wrestling with Johnners podcast is celebrating its first anniversary next weekend with an Ask Johnners Q&A special. The main show drops weekly on Saturdays with news and recaps for WWE, AEW, NXT, NXT UK. He's also conducted interviews with former WWE referee Jimmy Corderas and former WCW ring announcer Gary Michael Capetta. There's a name I haven't heard in a while. You can find it all on popular podcast platforms like Apple, Spotify, Podbean, and YouTube. And you can follow the show on Twitter at withjohnners_pod. That is his handle. Congrats on the anniversary. And I remember giving John some advice about a year ago, right around the time that he launched the show, so I'm very happy to see that it's doing well. Also, happy birthday to Chris, who turns 29 years old today, been a listener for 4 years now. I love it. And Shant34 and C Texas Sauce, thank you for the kind reviews on iTunes. I also want to mention this, because yeah, as I'm doing more live streams, I want people to be aware. Super chats are open on all of my live streams. I mean, PayPal probably is always the better way to go. It's just more direct that way. And, you know, YouTube takes a certain chunk of the super chat stuff. But super chats are open on all of the live streams that I do for those who may not be aware. You can also donate when I go live on YouTube that way. I've been setting up some fun alerts this week for certain dollar amounts. And you'll be acknowledged on screen each time when you donate or each time when you subscribe to the YouTube channel. You'll get a shout out on screen. So keep that in mind for the Dynamite stream on Wednesdays and the Full Gear stream next Saturday when I go live after the AEW pay-per-view. I will have predictions for that a little bit later on here today. There'll also be a special $12 Super Chat alert in honor of our 12-year anniversary. So I just wanted to get that out there as an FYI for those who may not be aware. Last week, I talked about the Jordan Miles story, which was a big story for a few days until all the Saudi Arabia stuff happened, and then everybody forgot about Jordan Miles. But it was a big story. He did get himself in a lot of hot water. The situation is that WWE had produced a t-shirt for him that he perceived as being very racist, and when you look at the design and you look at it, you know, what he's talking about, it becomes very obvious that this shirt never should have been made in the first place. Certainly not on a black background the way it was. And there were a lot of other wrestlers who said, you know what, you're right, he's got a good point, but they feel he took it too far with some of his comments. And WWE did put a statement out. I don't recall if I mentioned it on the show last week or if it came after. WWE did respond. They did put a statement out saying that Jordan Miles approved his t-shirt for sale. As always, we work collaboratively with all of our performers to develop logos and merchandise designs and get their input and approval before proceeding. This was the same process with Albert, which is his real name, and we responded swiftly once he later requested that the logo slash t-shirt be redesigned and no t-shirts were sold. That is not true, by the way, about everybody is brought into the process and it's all collaborative and nothing is approved of unless everybody in the process has signed off on it. That does not appear to be the case, as is evidenced by a tweet that is still up. It has not been taken down. Back in August, so a little over 2 months ago, one of their other NXT stars, Steve Cutler of the Forgotten Sons, posted a tweet saying, "Funny how you aren't a chosen one, not notified by the company, but rather by the fans, of the release of your first ever piece of merchandise to increase your income to better your family's lifestyle. Go buy our merch." And he included a photo of what I guess is the first t-shirt for the Forgotten Sons. Again, that tweet is still up from August 24th. He's basically saying, nobody told me I had a t-shirt coming out. Maybe they told Gunner, you know, Jackson Ryker, and Wesley Snipe. What the fuck is the guy's name? Wesley Snipes. I tell you what, if Wesley Snipes comes to wrestle in NXT, then for that night, I will watch USA and not TNT. But yes, apparently Steve Cutler had no idea. That right there undercuts this whole statement that WWE put out that everybody is aware of the process. Bullshit! No, they're not. And I just found one example. It took me 5 minutes. The Forgotten Sons have forgotten merch, apparently. But ACH, Jordan Miles, call him whatever you want, he did respond. He said he did object to the design. He suggested an alternative to WWE, but WWE went forward with the design anyway, and he was very uncomfortable. He went on this unbelievable tirade. This was after I recorded last week. I'm kind of sorry I didn't record until the next day, because after I told the initial story, he went crazy with all of these different tweets on Twitter. He sent out a screenshot from this guy, Baker Landon, who works as a creative coordinator for the NXT brand. He posted a screenshot of an email saying, "Oh, hey, Albert, you know, Triple H attended a meeting and he had a revision for your logo. But, you know, he wanted the letters and the logo to be more teethy. And what I've attached is what he liked. Also have basic t-shirts on there that he approved as well. Road Dogg preferred the gray instead of the black background. But let us know what you think." So the shirt ended up getting released weeks ago. For a few hours, and got taken down very quickly. And, you know, Miles said, "When I originally saw the design, I was uncomfortable. Rather than addressing the issues, I decided to counteroffer with another design. Baker Landon lied to my face. He said Triple H wanted this design, and so my hands were tied. I spoke with Triple H in person, and his impression was that I approved it. My soul has not been able to rest properly since I laid eyes on it." Now, he has not been on NXT television since losing to Adam Cole. He won the breakout tournament right a few months ago. He beat Cameron Grimes in the finals, and he earned the right to challenge for any championship of his choosing. He opted to go after the NXT championship. He had a pretty good match on TV with Adam Cole. He lost. He has not been seen or heard from since. Now, the Observer claims that he's not hurt physically. It's not like any kind of a physical injury that he's healing up from, but he's on medical leave for something that is, quote, not an injury. And of all the other crazy tweets that were being posted, just tweet after tweet after tweet in this tirade by Miles, one of the things that he posted and he thought better of and he quickly deleted it and took it down was he posted a video, a very brief clip, saying that WWE does not care about black people, with you know, him giving the middle finger, basically pulling a Kanye West. That was up very briefly before, I guess, he thought better of it and took that down. But the thing that got people all riled up and really, in some cases, turned against Jordan Miles, like, oh, he's gone too far now, was him going on a rant about Jay Lethal of Ring of Honor, and he went off on Ring of Honor as being a racist company. But this is what he said about Lethal. He said, "Fuck ROH too. They only allowed one African-American to be the top guy, while guys like Cedric Alexander," and then I think he tagged Stokely Hathaway in this as well, "and myself, had to chase this visible carrot on a stick. Name another African-American who has reached great heights there other than this Uncle Tom. And so he called Jay Lethal an Uncle Tom, which is not a very nice thing to call somebody. And everybody was up in arms. Titus O'Neil took to Twitter. He said, "I am 100% in agreement that the shirt is very distasteful. That being said, bringing others into this to vent your frustration on issues that have nothing to do with WWE or the shirt is also very distasteful. If it's for the culture, as you call it, don't attack those in it." And there was a lot of sentiments very similar to what Titus had to say. And I'm just reading this and I'm going, poor Jay Lethal. Poor Jay Lethal, who probably was lying in a hospital bed with his arm in a cast and his phone blowing up, not knowing what the hell was going on. Because the day before all of this happened, at a Ring of Honor show in England, Jay Lethal suffered a broken arm in a match against PCO when PCO landed awkwardly on top of his arm, which sounds very similar to what happened with Kurt Angle and Bob Holly on that one episode of SmackDown many years ago where Angle hit a moonsault and he landed legs and knees first right on Holly's arm and broke his arm. And I talked to Bob about this when I interviewed him a number of years ago. He didn't even accept any pain medication. Imagine that. Guy just had his arm broken in half, didn't want any pain pills because he didn't want to be addicted. But that's kind of what the description of that injury kind of reminds me of that. I look at the entire situation, and I don't doubt that he was very upset about the t-shirt design, and he has every right to speak out and be vocal about it if it offends him in that way. I wish more people had the backbone and the spine in this company to speak up when there is something that they perceive as being unjust, they're being treated unfairly, they see somebody else being treated unfairly. I wish that, you know, people didn't walk around on eggshells. I mean, Steve Austin said it best, you know, this was going back a few years now, 5 years probably, but at that time he flat out said to Vince McMahon, "I'm in the back when you invite me to these shows and you got guys and girls walking around on eggshells." And then Vince McMahon's classic answer of, "Well, don't rock the boat," or some bullshit like that. What a great fucking answer that was. So I wish there were more people who had it in them to not just be afraid of their job and feel as though they can speak up without the fear of reprisal and without the fear of being unemployed or buried or not being put on television anymore. So that's fine if he had an issue with that. But the more he went on and on and on and some of the things he was saying, it just struck me as a guy who was trying to get released. It struck me as a guy who's unhappy with the position that he is in. He's been signed, I think, going back to February. He only made his debut a few months ago. And it just struck me as somebody who maybe was having second thoughts about being in this place that, frankly, he probably should never have signed with to begin with. It was kind of an odd fit. He could have gone somewhere else. He chose to come to WWE. I kind of look at it the same way I look at Kushida, and I hate to say that because I like Kushida. But when I heard Kushida was coming in, it was like, that's kind of an odd fit, especially their treatment of certain other talents that have, you know, come over for work in WWE. Some have had success, others have not. It just seemed like maybe not the best fit. He seems like somebody who will likely end up on 205 Live one day. He's a lot better than that. And ACH kind of is the same way. I kind of look at that the same way. It just struck me as a guy trying to get fired. Now on Tuesday, last Tuesday, he posted the following on his Instagram. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically he was very apologetic for some of the things that came off as very disrespectful and very unprofessional. He didn't apologize. He wasn't apologizing for a lot of the things he said, but he recognized that he just came off, you know, very badly. And he said that in the past he's been treated poorly and he's had this pent up within him for a very long time. And he just reached a point where it all came out. All in one fell swoop. The shirt is what triggered it. It was kind of the thing that triggered this avalanche of events, and all of this anger came out. But he ended by saying, "I'm the best in the world. No man or woman will stop me from being honest. Go the distance." So he's out with some undisclosed medical issue that is not physical. That sounds to me like it might be a mental health issue. And so hopefully he is doing whatever he needs to do to get himself well and to get himself better. I think it would be a bad look for WWE to fire him over this. But I also cannot envision a scenario now where he really is going to go very far in this company. After this, after some of the things that he said, You honestly believe that he can come back and get a big push and be a big star on that roster after this? I have my doubts. So he may have really screwed himself over on this by taking things beyond just the t-shirt and some of the things he said, especially the stuff about Jay Lethal. And maybe, look, you know, he's worked with Jay and been around Jay. I'll say this, I've not heard anything negative about Jay Lethal or you know, people dealing with him. I got to interview, Jay Lethal was one of the first people I got to interview on my podcast many, many years ago. And my what little interaction he and I had, and this is going back many years, was fine. And I've not heard anything different from other people who know Jay Lethal or have worked with Jay Lethal, shared a locker room with him. So it just feels like he was unfairly maligned and brought into this argument that he really had nothing to do with. And the poor guy's laying with a broken arm. The last thing he needed was for this to blow up the way that it did. Raw last Monday night was in St. Louis, Missouri. Twitter poll had over 4,000 votes. 19% thumbs up, 81% thumbs down. For a show that was headlined by a divorce court segment where Lana accused Rusev of being a sex-addicted adulterer and ended with Lana and Lashley swapping spit over Rusev's black and blue balls, probably more blue than black, let's be honest, a segment that has so far, last I checked, netted them 7 million views on their YouTube channel. You know what else has 7 million views on YouTube? A video of a sloth taking a shit. Anyone here watch Coyote Peterson on those Brave Wilderness videos? Yeah, he's got a video of a pooping sloth. Congratulations, you are as entertaining as a shitting sloth. At least sloths are cute. At least they have some redeeming quality to them. And yet the tease of this segment throughout the night, shockingly, was not enough to hold viewers. Raw brought in 2.1 million viewers last Monday, with that third hour sinking under 2 million, and that was for an hour that also had a Falls Count Anywhere match with the Universal Champion, and AJ Styles in action, the United States Champion, plus all the nonsense at the end of the show. And they lost a ton of viewers. So some hits and misses. This was a lame duck show for those waiting for sweet Saudi money to pass. And I got a comment from somebody after I was talking about the Saudi show, and they said, well, the show is not for you, Solomonster. It's just, it's like a house show. You shouldn't judge it the same way. Hey, let me explain something to you. Since you're this person, and thankfully he was the only person who said this. I don't know who he is. I don't know if he's a regular listener of my show. Probably not. I don't even know if he knows, you know, how to work a computer. So I'm going to say this very slowly in case this person is listening. And I said it to him there, but I'll say it here again. You can no longer use that argument that the Saudi shows are not for us and that they're just a house show. It's like a glorified house show. You lose the ability to say that when you spend weeks of your television shows promoting the Saudi Arabia show. They were promoting The Fiend and Seth Rollins. In fact, they did a title change on this show. Would they do that title change on a fucking house show? Weeks of promotion on TV, contract signings, Braun Strowman, Tyson Fury, Cain Velasquez, Brock Lesnar. Don't give me that bullshit. That, oh, these shows are just glorified house shows and they're not for you, so you shouldn't judge them the same way. Not anymore, they're not. Not when you spend weeks of television time building up to the Saudi Arabia show. It was a pay-per-view like every other pay-per-view that they do. It deserves to be judged accordingly. And don't give me this, oh, it's for the Saudi people. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's for the payday. They make a lot of money off it when they actually get paid. But don't give me this nonsense. It's not for us. It's not for us. Maybe a year ago, you could say that, maybe? Where you can get away with just not watching it because, you know, they kind of promoted it on TV, but the whole television show was not just filled with promotion for it, but not anymore. This was a full-fledged pay-per-view. And I'm going to judge it the way that I would judge any other show. So be quiet with that nonsense. This episode of Raw was all about promoting sweet Saudi money. This was a very skippable episode of Raw, where if you missed this show and picked it up, let's say a week or two later, you know, I missed this week, but I'll catch up with I'll catch up with what's going on, you know, the week after. You would not have missed a thing. You know, I kind of look at it like this. Raw, Monday Night Raw, is not really a weekly show anymore. It's more like a monthly show. with what feels like three encores each month. That's a great way to describe what Monday Night Raw really has become. Now, what did I like? I did like some things on this show. I liked the heel Kabuki Warriors. I liked Asuka misting Paige in the face. She asked for a towel to wipe the stuff out of her eyes. I was going to make a joke there, but I'm just going to behave myself and leave that one alone. Putting Paige with the two of them, I know why they did it. They wanted them to have a mouthpiece because their English wasn't great. But it was always a very odd fit, putting Paige with Asuka and Kairi Sane. They don't need her now. They're doing great without her. They don't need her now. So they had to, you know, it was nice of them to at least do some kind of split. They could have just kept Paige off TV and never acknowledged her ever again. I give them credit for at least doing something where they turned on her. And I guess the misting in the face was the first bump that she's taken since she retired. I thought Kairi Sane and Becky Lynch was enjoyable, and they gave them a lot of time. Becky gets a hard-fought win with the disarm her, so that was fine. I like Drew McIntyre and Ricochet, even though this was the third or fourth time now they've done this match on TV. They gave this almost 20 minutes. It was the best thing on the entire show. Ric Flair was in McIntyre's corner. Hulk Hogan was in Ricochet's corner. Some of the best parts of the match were Drew McIntyre trolling Hulk Hogan with his own poses. They did a bullshit finish with Randy Orton running in, hitting Ricochet with one of the most just brutal RKO cells that I've ever seen. He basically spiked himself, but Ricochet's head sort of bent. His head and neck bent to the side upon impact. He's lucky he didn't break his neck. That was a cell that RVD would be proud of before bitching that Ricochet stole it from him. So I look at Randy Orton out there. He's smiling. He's getting a big reaction because the RKO, it's the easiest pop in the entire company, other than saying the name of the city that you're in. And the Rock's promo, the Hollywood Rock promo where he chastised the fans for that will always be one of my favorites. You know, he was in Toronto and of course they cheered. And, yay! They cheered! They said the name of my city! Yay! It's true. It's true. You want to get an easy reaction? Why do you think Mick Foley made a career out of it? Just wherever you are, just say the name of the city and you'll get cheered. But Orton is living his best life right now. This guy makes a boatload of money. His contract is up next year, which means that he's in prime position to make even more money and probably work less dates if he wants to. So he could go on more vacations with his wife. And in his free time, he gets drunk and streams Call of Duty. And he doesn't care. He tweets what he wants to tweet about. He'll talk about AEW, teasing that he might go there. He won't. He won't. He's got no reason to. Why would he leave? But the best part was when the match was over. McIntyre points at Hogan. Hogan's outside the ring. He leans over. He does that Hogan point with the finger where, you know, Hogan goes, "You!" And he points at him and he goes, "You!" And then he said, "Are screwed." I just thought that was awesome. I love that. That part of it I loved. What's that song by Soulja Boy? Anyway, I like that Humberto Carrillo got more TV time with a top name on the brand in AJ Styles, even though he tapped out for the second week in a row. Then he lost again in Saudi Arabia. And we were introduced to Catalina, or Carolina, as she was listed on WWE.com, as the new valet for Sin Cara, at least for a few weeks. Apparently she's not being called up full-time. She was ringside for the match with Sin Cara against Andrade Cien Almas. She was there as a counter to Zelina Vega on the outside. Today is Andrade's 30th birthday, by the way, so happy birthday to Andrade. May Charlotte give you the same gift that she gave that referee in WWE 2K20. Catalina was born in Santiago, Chile. She's only 19 years old. She signed with the company just this past August with NXT. So she's worked a bunch of NXT shows in and around Florida. This was her TV debut, though. She wore a mask. When Vega did try to get involved, she came over. Vega came off the apron. She tried for a Rana. Catalina, though, held her and swung her into the barricade. But that was still enough of a distraction for Andrade to roll up Sin Cara and get his feet on the ropes for the win. Hey, you know what? The best thing I could say about this, at least there's no 50-50 booking here. That's two wins in a row for Andrade over Sin Cara. They're not trading wins so far back and forth. I don't think we need to see this again. Unless they plan to do some kind of a mixed tag now, which I could see. But, you know, let them do the mixed tag if they're going to do it, but then let's move on. I don't know what beating Sin Cara really does for Andrade. Sin Cara is a dead character. Sin Cara del Muerte. That could be his new gimmick. Zombie Sin Cara. And that's where the likes ended, and I use that term very loosely, but that's where the likes ended for me with this show. Buddy Murphy was on the show. He got a win over R-Truth. Yes. Congratulations. He got a win over R-Truth. That segment sucked. They had the parade of 24/7 goofballs running out to play Ring Around the Rosie around the ring. The same routine they do every single week. No creativity whatsoever. It's just, hey, it's the 24/7 segment. Let's send out the clowns to run around the ring. When the bell rings, we'll have them all jog to the back. And we'll move on to segment 4. This did nothing for Buddy Murphy. One of the people, by the way, who has vowed never to return to Saudi Arabia after what happened this past week. But this did nothing for Buddy Murphy. This was a waste of time. But let me say this about R-Truth. Because I like R-Truth. He does the comedy stuff well. It's just that the whole 24/7 thing has worn on me. It's not an indictment on R-Truth or anything. I want to make that clear. R-Truth turns 48 years old in January. If you can believe it, 48. And I don't know how much longer he plans to do this for. He could go another 5 years, or he could retire next year. I haven't asked him, so I don't know. But I think when he is ready to wind down, what I would like to see them do with him is a serious storyline. One last serious storyline with R-Truth, where he goes after the WWE Championship. Not something to be played for laughs, something serious. Because I think the fans would get behind him if they tell the story the right way. It could make for some really compelling television. If we know that his career is winding down, and they come up with a story, and there's stories they could tell. I would hope, you know, with the army of writers that they have, they can come up with something for him. Tell the right story, I think it could make for some compelling TV. And he could probably cut some real good promos. We know he can talk. I'd like to see them do something like that with him before it's all over. You know, Mark Henry had the chance. Mark Henry had the chance to become a serious contender. He had the chance to become a world heavyweight champion. I don't think R-Truth would win the championship, and I'm not even saying necessarily that he should. I'm just saying that he deserves that. I think he deserves to have one last serious storyline. He is beloved by enough people that I think people could buy into it if they play it the right way. And I don't know if that's next year. I don't know if that's the year after. But he's not getting any younger. And yeah, he's good at the comedy stuff, but that, you know, it's like, why does everybody have to be one-dimensional in this company? You know, we've also seen him not doing comedy stuff. I'd like to see him get one last shot at it before it's all over. Seth Rollins and Eric Rowan was a miss for me. They had a false count anywhere match that ended with Rollins pinning Rowan under a forklift, the halftime heat finish from 1999, reincarnated 20 years later. They managed to take the one thing I did not like about that halftime heat match, the finish, and they used it here. I liked everything else about that match. I love Vince McMahon on commentary. I love the whole empty arena setting and Mankind getting his ass kicked and The Rock with all of his insults, and then brawling into the catering or the cafeteria, wherever they were, and throwing pies and cakes and shit at each other. You know, in the office, the phone rings, Rock picks up the phone. I loved everything about that match. Except the finish. I always thought that was a goofy finish with the forklift thing. Even though they had a great camera shot. There was a camera, which is also ridiculous when you think about it. But there was a camera attached to the forklift. And they managed to take that one element of that match I didn't like and they used it here. So I was not a fan of this. But speaking of Seth Rollins, the now former Universal Champion. He was a guest on the first episode of Corey Graves' new WWE podcast, After the Bell. By the way, Corey Graves has said that this is going to be an unfiltered show. You know, he constantly goes on about, I might get fired, I might get in trouble for saying this. So I, for one, and I hope you guys will join me, I, for one, cannot wait to hear his unfiltered point of view about this whole Saudi Arabia debacle. I'm waiting with bated breath. I'm sure episode 2 will have the full unfiltered story. I can't wait. But I only listened to the Rollins portion of this first podcast that he did. Graves brought up the finish to the Hell in a Cell match with Rollins and The Fiend and the fan reaction to it. And not two sentences into his answer, Rollins was calling all of those people who didn't like that finish and crapped all over that finish whiners and complainers. So here's Seth Rollins on this podcast whining about the whiners. He said, it's sort of like if people don't get what they want, they whine about it on Twitter. That's kind of what happens nowadays, and that happens with everything. It's not just our industry. By the way, that's right. Case in point, Seth Rollins, who every Sunday apparently goes on Twitter and says, I hate football. So he should know. But he says, if you do something and it strikes a chord, then it's almost like you're doing the right thing. I don't even know anymore. It's a weird industry. It's 2019, and I don't know what wrestling looks like anymore. It is a weird place. He says, you could go back 6 months. You can go back a year ago, Hell in a Cell. I was everybody's favorite. Those same people who were panning Hell in a Cell and talking about how Seth Rollins is not cool are the same people who were clamoring for me to be the guy to face Brock Lesnar going into WrestleMania. So I don't know what changed except for the fact that I became the person they wanted me to be, and then they hated me for it. And so it's a very fickle audience, but to answer your question directly, it feels awful. It's not a good feeling to go out there and put your body on the line, and not just at Hell in a Cell, but every single night for the past however many years I've been doing it, I've gone out and competed at an extremely high level, and dare I say I'm one of the very best at my job. And I do what I have to do when I have to do it, and so it hurts your feelings. You're a human being and you work hard. It's a tough pill to swallow sometimes. Seth Rollins is not totally wrong about the fans being fickle, but I don't know that I have ever seen another top guy in his position in WWE as the champion in WWE whining so much about being treated unfairly. Calling the fans whiners because they hated a shit finish that was universally panned. Shitting on the fans for not accepting mediocrity at a time when he happens to be the champion. Yeah, I'll bet it's a tough pill for him to swallow. I'll bet. Shitting on the fans is hardly going to make his problems go away, as thin-skinned as he is about this stuff. You know, what wasn't a good look for him were some of the comments he made about Jon Moxley after Moxley spilled his guts about why he left the company. Then the back and forth on Twitter with Will Ospreay and the line about the bank account comparing, you know, I got a bigger bank account than you do, which he at least had the humility to apologize for because he realized he fucked up. The stuff with Omega, I don't count because that was a receipt for what Omega said. And I look at all that, the stuff with Omega is being in jest. None of that stuff is to be taken seriously. So I don't hold that against him. I actually defended Rollins a week or two ago on that. So I'm not even counting that. But it just was one thing after another with these comments to Sports Illustrated, the tweets on social media. It came one right after the other. It painted him in a poor light as this whiny little brat. An athletic one. You know, CrossFit Jesus. Very good wrestler. But a whiny little brat. But what I heard here didn't do much to change my opinion about the way that he's been acting. With so much wine, I'm surprised he doesn't own his own vineyard in Napa Valley. The divorce court segment, the less said about it, the better. The fact that this was the main event of this show is an embarrassment. You know, compare that, quote, main event that we got on Monday with what we got on Wednesday and what we got on Friday. And yes, I understand it's not always about the match. It's not always about the work rate. But I'm just saying, in a week where we got some of the matches and the action that we got in AEW and NXT and even on SmackDown, which basically was NXT this week, and then you look at what they gave us at the end of the show on Monday night, did that really need to be the main event? Really? That's what you built your entire show around? That segment even got the 2 million that it did on USA is just proof that their core audience would watch a test pattern if they put one up on the screen for the last 15 minutes of the show. Then we get to SmackDown on Fox. From Riyadh to Buffalo. That should have been the subtitle of this show. Twitter poll, over 4,600 votes. We had 4,000 in the Raw poll. We had a lot more here. Over 4,600 votes, 91% thumbs up, 9% thumbs down. You talk about flipping things, doing a total 180 from what the Raw poll did. What was the Raw poll, I think, was, what was the Raw poll? 19 and, I think 19 up, right? 81 down? This was 91 up and 9 down. Hey, all you people who love to talk about how the polls are so negative, where are you now? I don't hear you now. Here's a positive poll for you. You're awfully silent. This was a Vince McMahon-approved show that was largely the brainchild of Triple H. The NXT invasion concept was Triple H. Of course it was Triple H. I mean, Triple H, NXT is his baby. No wonder NXT was put over so strong on this show. It was a Triple H idea. But Vince McMahon signed off on it. He approved it. I thought this was the best episode of SmackDown all year. I got emails from some people saying it was the worst. They hated the show. They couldn't stand it. Even when I was on with Keller the other night, there were a couple callers who called in. One person who was there at the building who said it was a C- or a D. I don't know. I can't understand for the life of me how you could watch that show and think it was a D. All right, maybe you don't think it was an A, but to call it a fail or a miss or a D or an F, I don't understand that. I don't know what you're looking for in a wrestling show. You look for unpredictability, you had unpredictability. You want some new faces, you got some new faces. You want some good matches, you got some good matches. It was a break from the usual formula. Yes, they were handicapped in that they were missing a lot of their key talents. So I can understand if you're a Roman Reigns fan, if you're a Chad Gable fan, if you're a King Corbin fan. That was a funny... But I can understand that you might be upset you didn't get to see some of those people on the show. But I thought this was the best episode of SmackDown all year. They were forced out of their comfort zone. They were forced to give us matches that we had never seen before. They were forced to introduce us to a bunch of new faces all at once, which is not always the most ideal way of introducing new people, because some people get drowned out, they get lost in all the noise. But they were forced to introduce a whole bunch of new faces to us all at once, and they put each and every one of them over strong. No comedy, no fluke wins, just total dominance. In place of the advertised main event, which I was absolutely devastated that we did not get to see, our originally scheduled main event of Roman Reigns one-on-one with Baron Corbin. I have found myself a good therapist. She is going to help get me through this. It may take some time. It may take some powerful meds. I just can't shake this feeling of sadness that has taken hold of me for not getting to see King Corbin against the Big Dog. And to hear Michael Cole call him the Big Dog. Maybe I should get a therapy dog. And I'll call him Joe. And I'll put a little vest on him. But I'll be okay. I'll be all right. I'll get through this. Don't worry about me. Last week's show, let me just mention this first. Last week's episode of SmackDown, which was bumped from Fox to FS1 due to Game 3 of the World Series, earned the lowest viewership in the 20-year history of SmackDown. So for those of you trivia buffs who love a good trivia note, if you were ever curious, what was the lowest rating for an episode of SmackDown? That was 888,000 viewers. Down from the 2.4 million that they did the week prior. Now, this was on a different network. This was up against a World Series game that pulled 12 million viewers. Back on Fox, the final number, not surprisingly, rebounded this week. But they promoted some big names for that show. The FS1 show, the week they got bumped, they promoted some big names to try to keep that audience high. Brock Lesnar, Cain Velasquez, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair. And it meant nothing. I mean, I expected a drop, but not that kind of drop. This week's show, not surprisingly, was back over 2 million. In fact, they were at 2.5 million viewers this week. So NXT finally gets a win over AEW. It only took a month and a different network. With Michael Cole and Corey Graves stuck in Saudi Arabia, Tom Phillips got his job back for one night. He was joined by Renee Young and Aiden English. And later on, Pat McAfee took the place of Aiden English. And the Saudis, as far as I'm concerned, if the Saudis want to keep Michael Cole and Corey Graves for a little while longer, they can do so. Hat tip to Tom, Renee, and Pat. I thought they just brought it on Friday night. There was an energy there that is usually missing from WWE commentary. Pat can be annoying. I've seen him sometimes on these NXT pre-shows and stuff. He can be annoying from what I've seen of him, but I liked him on this show. I liked him being the de facto cheerleader for NXT. He got a text message, as far as how all this unfolded, he got a text message from Triple H at 1:42 p.m. that day, asking him, can you make it to Buffalo? And so McAfee reached out to Jim Irsay, the owner of the Indianapolis Colts. McAfee was a punter for the Colts for many years. So he reached out to Irsay to see if he might be able to hitch a ride on his personal plane. And lo and behold, Irsay let him fly to Buffalo. So he was able to make it to the show about 90 minutes before it started. Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman were on the show. They opened SmackDown. They were not supposed to be on SmackDown, which would be a rare time that Brock would work two shows back-to-back. That was not the plan, but he was on a plane back to the United States probably before the fucking show even ended in Saudi Arabia. And he had Hulk Hogan with him and Ric Flair with him because he offered his plane to them because they had mechanical issues of their own trying to get to Saudi Arabia. And actually, Brock was the one who came forward and said, hey, ride with me. So Lesnar rode with Hogan and Flair and Jimmy Hart, and probably Heyman, I would think, to Saudi Arabia. And it would be pretty shitty if Brock said, you're not riding with me, find your own way home, and just took off without them. So at least he took them back with him. So they were on SmackDown. They opened the show. Brock looked completely bored. He's probably tired too, but he looked totally bored. Very annoyed to be there. I guess that's his natural face on this show, his own version of a resting bitch face. They had time to kill since the show had to be rewritten, so Heyman talked very slow. They showed the Lesnar-Kane-Velasquez match in its entirety, all 2 minutes and 14 seconds of it. They showed the post-match attack by Rey Mysterio. Heyman said, since Rey Mysterio, and this was comedy. Paul Heyman says that since Rey Mysterio is a Raw star, he is a member of the Monday Night Raw roster, and Brock Lesnar is on SmackDown, Brock is unable to kick Rey Mysterio's ass for what he did because they're on different shows. This is after Rey Mysterio was on SmackDown, I think, each of the last 2 or 3 weeks, something like that. They've been mixing people heading into the Saudi show now for weeks, but all of a sudden there's a hard split. There's a hard split. Rey Mysterio is not allowed in the building, or else I guess he'll be arrested for trespassing. And so the only way for Brock Lesnar to get his revenge on Rey Mysterio would be to do what he did here, which was quit. Brock Lesnar quit SmackDown. The WWE champion, the champion of SmackDown, quit the brand so that on Monday night he can go hunting for Rey Mysterio. And so there it is. It appears they are swapping champions with The Fiend representing SmackDown as the Universal Champion with the tomato title. And Brock Lesnar has now taken the WWE Championship, just like that, over to Monday Night Raw. Now, as they're leaving the building, we see Triple H and Shawn Michaels in the back, which was sign number one. This was going to be an NXT night. Shawn even had his NXT hat or his NXT hoodie. Might have been both. He's like Mr. NXT now. We had a women's championship match. It was supposed to be a 6-person tag turned into a championship match. Bayley defending against Nikki Cross. See, the one benefit of the women not being allowed to go to Saudi Arabia, other than the 2 that they took with them, or 3, I guess, if you count Lana, is that they were all here. If they wanted to, they could have done 2 hours of nothing but women. They could have had Evolution 2 if they wanted to. I'm grateful they didn't, because I was kind of hoping that it would be an NXT-heavy show, and it was. But they certainly could have if they wanted to. They could have taken main roster women, NXT women, and had an all-women show. And that would have been very interesting to see how they would have done in the ratings. Because I've heard some of the quarter hours for some of the women's segments are some of the highest ones on the show sometimes. So how would an all-women show have done on Fox? Is an answer, I guess, that we will not have. But I would have been very interested to see how that would have turned out. This match here, it was fine. It was all right. You know, Bayley hit the elbow off the top. Nikki kicked out. So Nikki Cross is on the top rope. Sasha Banks shoves her off. Bayley hits this new front face driver of hers for the win. And then the fun began. Out from the crowd came the NXT Women's Champion, Shayna Baszler. She shoved Sasha face first into the ring post. She got into the ring. She hit Bayley with a gut wrench slam and a running knee strike. And Shayna Baszler walked back through the crowd and to the back or out of the arena. I guess not, since she came back later on. This was, I love this. This was great. I'd say half the crowd seemed to know who she was. Half the crowd probably didn't. But she came off here like a total badass. And this was the first of many NXT cameos here on this show. There was a Sami Zayn segment in the back. Of course, Nakamura was not with him because Nakamura was probably one of the ones either on his way home on that charter flight or still stuck with all the other, I guess, not the top 20. As Curtis Axel would say. So Sami Zayn is cutting a promo and overwalks Matt Riddle and Keith Lee, who now are the best of friends on the show. They were partners the other night. They show up together on SmackDown. It's like Aleister Black and Ricochet. Two guys who have, on television, nothing to do with each other, who now have been put together as seemingly a new team. I don't know if that's official or not, but they're like attached at the hip now, these two. So they come over, and this was played for comedy. Sammy sees he's outnumbered. He tries to back away. They follow him. They chase him into the arena. They beat him up. Riddle hit Bro Derek. Lee hit a moonsault off the second rope, I believe. Nice pop that he got. So, yeah, this was a good little showcase for Riddle and for Keith Lee. We had a Miz TV segment. It was supposed to be Miz TV with Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt was not present. And so instead, Miz was going to interview himself. And I was reaching for the remote control upon hearing that. Instead, though, he turned his attention to this invasion of NXT talent. That brought out Tommaso Ciampa. He called himself the greatest sports entertainer in the world. He came off very heelish here. Like, if you didn't know who Tommaso Ciampa was, you would think he was a heel. So they're going back and forth, jaw-jacking with each other. He says, you know, Miz, you're exactly what's wrong with Raw and SmackDown. You come out here, all you do is play pro wrestler. You're not a tough guy. This led to a match between Miz and Ciampa. Ciampa won clean with the fairy tale ending. First in a clean sweep of wins on this show for NXT. Daniel Bryan runs into Triple H and Shawn Michaels in the back. Why are you here? That's what he wants to know. Why are you here? It leads to a tease of a match between Bryan and Triple H. And then Triple H says, well, you know, you're not going to wrestle me. Shawn Michaels is in the background taking his jacket off. People are getting excited. And then Triple H looks at him and goes, put your jacket back on. Shawn says, yeah, it's cold in here. He puts the jacket back on. The ultimate troll, Shawn Michaels. Instead, he brings in Adam Cole. And they set up an NXT championship match in the main event. First time ever, one-on-one, Adam Cole against Daniel Bryan. Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville were scheduled to wrestle Carmella and Dana Brooke. We cut to the back. We see Bianca Belair destroying both of them in their place. Out comes Tegan Knox and Rhea Ripley, who they compared on commentary to Charlotte Flair, which tells you what they must think of her. They compare her to Charlotte in that people have been saying that she could be the next big breakout star in the women's division, like Charlotte was, which she absolutely could be and should be. If I had one nitpick here, one thing that bothered me. I did not like seeing Rhea and Tegan out there together as partners, all chummy. You know, they completely blew off whatever story that there may have been for a feud or even just teasing friction. If, let's say, they end up as tag team partners in the War Games match in a few weeks. If they end up on the same team, they could have built up some potential tension there between them. Because if you remember, Rhea Ripley was in the ring with Tegan Knox. She was her opponent when Tegan hurt her knee, when she blew out her knee last year. And then after the injury, for weeks on social media, Rhea mocked her mercilessly. Just mocked the fact that she got hurt, and it just seemed to be setting up this ready-made feud for Tegan when she came back. Now they're walking out there as tag team partners. It's like they're best friends. I didn't like that, but I loved everything else they did here. They annihilated Mandy and Sonya. Outside the ring, Tegan went to go toss Sonya Deville over the announce table. I think what happened is that she could probably see the announcers were not moving and Renee was still sitting at the desk and she stopped. It looked like Tegan stopped and was not going to throw Sonya over the desk, but Sonya went anyway. She threw herself over the announce desk, and in so doing, she caught poor Renee Young right in the face with her foot. Nailed her with a solid boot right to the face. She took it like a champ. Moxley would be proud of that bump. That was only the second bump that Renee Young has ever taken in her career, she said in a video on WWE.com. The other bump, she took a chair shot once. I have no recollection of her ever taking a chair shot, so maybe somebody can find that or tell me what she's talking about. But this was her the second bump of her career, and if she has a say in it, it will be her last. I think she is over the whole commentary thing, which is kind of funny because this might have been her best night on commentary, or at least her least offensive one. And think about it. She went into the show, no preparation, no time to think, no time to overthink, no time to be nervous. These people had no prep time whatsoever. They just went out there and they had a great night, I thought, on commentary. Now, I'm not saying the solution is just to never prepare. And be like Jesse Ventura back in the day with Jim Ross. That you know, I know that was always a constant source of tension between the two of them. JR would spend hours prepping for the show, and Jesse would just show up and just talk. But Jesse had a knack for that. Jesse was great. Jesse didn't have to prepare. He knew he had a smart guy sitting next to him, and he could just be Jesse Ventura. Not everybody is going to be like Jesse Ventura. He could probably come back today and be one of the best commentators in all of wrestling. And at this point, he's probably old as dirt. So I'm not saying the answer is just don't prepare, but I think there is something to be said for not being overly coached or scripted, you know, on headset probably, but also just go into it and just feel it. Just feel what's going on and react. And sometimes that's really the best way to approach these things. We had Rhea putting Mandy in that inverted cloverleaf she started using. Which is a great finish. Mandy tapped out. So another dominant showing here for NXT. That led to the main event. Triple H and Shawn Michaels, they come out to the ring. Stephanie McMahon comes out. Well, there had to be some kind of blemish on this show. We knew it couldn't be perfect. Out comes Stephanie McMahon. For no reason other than to talk about the women wrestling in Saudi Arabia. What a landmark night this was. What a big deal this was. I mean, this was Rosa Parks in the back of the bus. Let us never forget that this is the same Stephanie McMahon who once compared her father's federal indictment to the terrorist attacks of 9/11 and how the struggles her family went through and how they tried to ruin my family's reputation. That was the same as the struggles that America was now facing in the face of Osama bin Laden. If that didn't win for most disgusting promotional tactic in the Observer that year, I would love to know what did. How many of us would have guessed going into this show on Friday that Adam Cole would be headlining SmackDown on Fox, defending the NXT Championship in a 20-minute main event against Daniel Bryan? It's the sort of main event that you would get if I had snuck into the building in Buffalo in disguise and locked Vince McMahon in a broom closet. You would get Adam Cole against Daniel Bryan for the NXT Championship. Or Matt Riddle against Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship. Do you realize that we had Brock Lesnar and Matt Riddle? Didn't hit me until the show was over. We had Brock Lesnar and Matt Riddle on the same show. Now, they didn't cross paths, but they will. Give it time. I believe one day they will. And hopefully it'll be on a bigger show than SmackDown. Crowd was quiet to start. They really got into it in the last few minutes. Some people seemed to know who Adam Cole was. They did the whole Adam Cole Bay Bay chant when he came out for his ring intro. As the match went on, if they did not know who he was before, they do now. They had, unsurprisingly, a great match. They had time to fill, so they gave them 20 minutes out there. They had very little time to prepare. But, you know, these guys are pros. Daniel Bryan is still among the very best in all of wrestling. That he could go out there and have a match like this, to me, speaks volumes about the kind of wrestler that he is, still. Shawn Michaels, sitting ringside, he looked like a concerned father watching on. He's watching his first pupil, right, in Daniel Bryan against his current one in Adam Cole. Now you throw him in there, and what a fucking triple threat match that would be. There was one spot that I cringed watching, and I feared that Adam Cole might have broken his neck. And to be honest with you, I'm still concerned. I have a feeling that this is the sort of thing that's going to come back in a few months or a year to really bite this guy in the ass. So if you hear that Adam Cole sometime in the next 6 to 12 months needs neck surgery, you could trace it back to this spot here. Brian gave Cole a release German suplex from the top rope. He dumps this guy backwards right on top of his head. Brian, he stayed on the ropes. He was hanging upside down from his legs. But Cole went flying. He had a bad landing right on the side of his neck, his head bent to the side. It kind of reminded me of that ricochet bump off the RKO, only this guy got dumped from the top rope. It was sickening. Brian went for the, and that's on both guys. I mean, that's on Cole for taking that, and that's on Brian for doing that. That was just stupid. I'm sorry. That was dumb. Brian went for the diving headbutt. He missed. He got the lapel lock on. Cole made the ropes. Brian went for the running knee. Cole caught him with a super kick, hit a Panama Sunrise, and the last shot to win the match and retain the NXT Championship. He pinned the former WWE Champion in the middle of the ring. 1-2-3. Daniel Bryan went into WrestleMania this year as the WWE Champion. And Adam Cole pinned this guy clean in the middle of the ring on Fox in his very first match on SmackDown. Brian put this guy over clean. I thought for sure Roderick Strong was going to come out and interfere, and there would be a DQ, and you'd have SmackDown guys out there, big brawl at the end of the show with the NXT crew, and that didn't happen. So this was a pleasant surprise. They put the new face over, as they did with NXT all night long, because they had to. They had to establish NXT as being on the same level as Raw and SmackDown, which it is now. Now that they're on USA Network, it is. They cannot be seen as inferior. They cannot be seen as less than, at least not until Survivor Series, where I'm sure they're going to lose, because it is Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT at Survivor Series this year, as they broke last week during the Saudi show. We learned that for the first time. It's going to be Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. And I have every expectation that NXT is going to be on the losing end of things and get their clocks cleaned. And they'll have the built-in excuse of, well, you know, TakeOver was the night before, and some of the NXT stars at Survivor Series, they're probably pulling double duty, and they have a War Games match the night before, so they're all beat up and they're all tired. That could be the built-in excuse, you know, if and when they lose. But if you want people to take NXT seriously against Raw and SmackDown, the way to do that is to have them beat Raw and SmackDown, and that's what they did on this show. Triple H gathered up the whole NXT crew at the end of the show. In the ring, Leo Rush was there, Isaiah Swerve Scott was there, Dakota Kai joined them, Raul Mendoza, along with Keith Lee and Tommaso Ciampa and Matt Riddle and everybody else, Shayna Baszler. I don't normally like these rah-rah things they do where you've got the heels and the baby faces commingling for the sake of the team. We got to do it for the team. At least Tommaso Ciampa, this dude knows his character. This guy gets it. He's out there in the ring. He didn't smile. He didn't clap. He stayed far away from Adam Cole. He stared at Adam Cole's title. He stared at Goldie from across the ring. Because for him to be near Adam Cole and not murder him would have come off very poorly. Kind of like seeing Rhea Ripley standing next to Shayna Baszler. I hated that. Triple H said, you know, he borrowed here from his post-WrestleMania 14 promo. Talked about how you go to your blood, you go to your family. I half expected X-Pac to come walking out. They fired the first shot, he said, of Raw and SmackDown. We are NXT. This was as good of an advertisement for NXT as they could have had, short of them just repeatedly telling us throughout the night to tune in on Wednesdays at 8 p.m., which storyline-wise really wouldn't have made a whole lot of sense, so I'm kind of glad they didn't do that. But this was the best way to advertise that NXT brand, by putting their top stars front and center and portraying them as this dominant force not to be fucked with, and winning. That's the key. In week one, they won. They were booked like winners. Then again, so was the Nexus in week one, and we all know how that ended. But I think that we will probably end up getting a few main roster faces popping up at Full Sail. At least that's what I thought they would do. You know, tit for tat. Kind of like you break into my house, I'm going to show up and take a dump on your back porch kind of thing. SmackDown being swept by the NXT stars reminded me, though, that they also got swept by Raw last year at Survivor Series, I think save for one kickoff match that SmackDown won. They didn't even count that in the totals. SmackDown got swept by Raw. In fact, I think Raw has won the battle of brand supremacy over SmackDown for the last 2 or 3 years in a row. And remember some people last year saying, oh, you're so impatient. It's going somewhere. They're telling a story with SmackDown. Let it play out. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What a great story that turned out to be. Please do tell me what that story was. So here's SmackDown yet again taking the L in the Battle of the Brands. But once they get their full roster back, they're going to have to go and get some of that momentum back. And what better way to do that than to show up at Full Sail and destroy the place? Although after the travel week from hell that they all had, I feel bad even suggesting that, because that means they'd have to be back on the road probably a day or two early just to get them to Orlando on Wednesday. But then again, it's all a moot point because WWE's flying out to Europe for a European tour. So, yep, forget that idea. They're not going to be able to do that this week or even the following week. Maybe the week before Survivor Series, they can get some of those guys in at Full Sail. I think that would be fun. I mean, this brand split's a joke anyway, so hell, I mean, if you're going to have brands going at it, you may as well go all the way with it. Have them show up on each other's turf. Support for the Sound Off comes from our friends at Manscaped. Number one in men's below-the-belt grooming, Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Have you ever groomed your pride and joy? Some men probably can't even find their pride and joy. It's so bushy down there. I mean, hell, they may need a weed whacker to clear that mess. Don't use a weed whacker, by the way. That would be really dangerous and really dumb. You know what's not dangerous? Using Manscaped Perfect Package 2.0. Inside that package is their Lawnmower 2.0 electric trimmer, which uses waterproof and skin-safe technology to protect you from nicking your sack. Of course, how could I forget the Crop Preserver? Anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant under your arms, don't you? Well, I mean, some of you do. So why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? You know what else is inside this perfect package? Anti-chafing performance boxer briefs that keep your package cool and smelling fresh all day long. Or in wrestling terms, when your package is feeling raw, give it some NWA power. For on-the-go freshness, you'll also have the Crop Reviver at your disposal. It's a ball toner spray. Right now, get 20% off and free shipping when you use the code SOLOMONSTER at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. And all you have to do is use the code SOLOMONSTER at checkout. So be like Dolph Ziggler most of his career. Do the job, but make sure you use the right tools. Your balls will thank you. Casey Michael is a guy who's pretty plugged in to the happenings around the WWE Performance Center. He runs the website Squared Circle Sirens, which reports on a lot of women's wrestling news. He posted a rare, ominous tweet that kind of got overlooked by some people, I think, in the noise of everything that happened this past week, saying that they are literally running out of lockers at the Performance Center because they have been stockpiling so much talent, not using them necessarily, but just signing them and stockpiling them so nobody else could have them, that they are literally running out of lockers to give to these people. And, more ominously, there are a lot of very unhappy people in NXT right now. And he's heard of a lot of people getting empty promises. There's talk about them not getting these TV raises they were promised. A lot of empty promises, and a lot of people apparently wanting to get released. And it makes me wonder, after this great SmackDown show that I just got done talking about and looking at what they did on Friday night, it makes me wonder if part of the reason they decided to add NXT for the first time to the Survivor Series this year, and the reason that this invasion was done, other than the fact that they had to, I guess because of the whole Saudi Arabia thing, but even just adding NXT into the mix this year, if this was all being done as a way to try to, or in part as a way to try to placate some of those people who were very disgruntled and who supposedly want to leave. Because if there's a lot of unhappiness, surely they must know about it. I mean, I'm sure they must be aware of the discontent that's there. So the cynic in me kind of questions the timing of all of this. AEW and NXT were both down big time this past week. AEW down in the ratings to 759,000 viewers, although they did double or nearly double NXT again in that key demo. NXT was down to 580,000, so under 600K for the first time. This is all mostly because of the World Series. Game 7, 23 million viewers. Absolutely devastated. Everything on TV, including pro wrestling, no different. The Lucha Bros and SCU had their tag team tournament final to crown new champions for the first time, and SCU, surprisingly to me anyway, walk away the new AEW tag team champions. And we also had Hikaru Shida beating Shanna in what I thought was the best women's match to date on AEW television. I said that that match could be Shanna's big break, and indeed, as it turns out, it was. She has since announced that she has signed a 3-year deal with AEW, so congrats to her. AEW has its Full Gear pay-per-view live next Saturday from the Royal Farms Arena in Baltimore, Maryland. Let's run through this card real quick. As it stands, this is what the card looks like. We have Pac taking on Hangman Adam Page. This match was originally scheduled to take place at Double or Nothing in Vegas in May. Got pulled for whatever the reason was. That whole situation is still confounding to me. These two wrestled on the debut episode of Dynamite last month. Pac won that match. Page needs this. I think he needs this. He did get a win over Sammy Guevara last week on TV, but I think he needs this win a lot more, so I think he gets the W here. We have the Young Bucks taking on Santana and Ortiz of the Inner Circle. This will be their first confrontation in AEW. I expect Santana and Ortiz to pick up the win for the Inner Circle. I do think it's important for the Inner Circle as a group to pick up some strong wins. For example, I don't think Jericho's going to lose the title. I'll talk about that in a second. But I think Santana and Ortiz in what really is going to be here their first big match in AEW. They had a squash on TV a week or two ago, but that was hardly a big match. I think they need this win. So I think Santana and Ortiz go over. And we've got Cody challenging Chris Jericho for the AEW Championship and to avoid the possibility of a draw. Should the match go the full 60 minutes, which it won't, they will have a panel of three judges at ringside to vote on a winner. We don't yet know who those judges are going to be. It's an interesting spin off of an old concept. We've seen this many, many years ago in the past. And I don't have a problem with it if they want to have three legends out there to get acknowledged and wave. Maybe it adds some drama the longer the match goes on for. I cannot see this match going 60 minutes. And nor do I think there's a reason for it to. So I don't expect that. I do expect Chris Jericho to retain. I think it would be far too soon to A, take the championship off of Jericho, because I think he's doing a great job so far in that role, but also would be way too early to put the belt on Cody without getting a lot of the, I think, backlash that you would get from some people saying, oh, well, look at this, you know, it's like the second coming of Triple H, he's giving himself the championship. There will be a time and a place for Cody to win that title, because Cody's over. Cody is a superstar to these people. And he will be the champion at some point. I just don't see the need for it to be now. I think it's too soon. I think Jericho keeps it. I think you can build to Jericho and Omega coming back to that at some point next year. And then having maybe Kenny be the one to take that title away from Jericho. I also would watch for MJF. I said this many, many weeks ago. I still feel the same way. I think MJF might do the turn here. And I say might do the turn. If you really think about it, He's a heel. It's almost like there is no turn to do. I mean, he would be turning on his friend. I guess that would be the turn, but he's already a heel. The guy's already a dick. This would just be him showing his true colors, and we come to find out that he's, you know, jealous of something that Cody did or said or whatever. He doesn't appreciate me as a friend. Whatever the story is they want to go with, I would keep my eye on him, especially if he's out there for the match. At the New Japan Power Struggle show, Jericho showed up in a video to, and by the way, Hiromu Takahashi very happy to hear that he is resurfaced and he will be wrestling at Wrestle Kingdom. He's been gone for a very long time. I think he's been gone for almost a year and a half with that broken neck. And there was some debate about whether or not he would ever be able to make a comeback. And so he has returned to New Japan, which is awesome. But Chris Jericho showed up in a video to challenge Hiroshi Tanahashi to a match on the second night of Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome on January 5th. Tanahashi accepted the challenge, so that match is now official. It's in Jericho's contract that he can work with New Japan. That does not mean that AEW is working with New Japan, or this opens the door to discussions between the two sides. I maintain that it is foolish for them to be at war with each other, or to ignore each other, and to not do business with each other. I think it's inevitable that at some point they will, but I will admit these issues seemingly go far deeper than even I thought. Nick Jackson of the Young Bucks was asked about this on Twitter, and he gave a pretty definitive answer as to whether or not AEW and New Japan are going to be working together. He said, "It's really not happening. Been asked this thousands of times, and telling the truth is always best. I don't want fans holding on to something that has zero chance of happening." Man, the bad blood there must be real bad for him to give an answer like that. And I don't think he's working people or anything like that. I think it's as things stand. I think that's how negative things are between the two sides. And I would love to know exactly what led to this. You know, was it the way that Omega left New Japan? Were there issues already bubbling up before he left? Is that why he left? I would love to know and pinpoint the moment or the event or the comment or the interview, whatever it was, that led to this kind of acrimony between the two sides. Because I just think it's foolish for them not to work with each other at some point. It would be a mutually beneficial relationship. It would be great for the fans. Great exposure, obviously, for New Japan on a network like TNT. I don't understand where this is all coming from. And speaking of Omega, we have Kenny Omega taking on Jon Moxley in an unsanctioned Lights Out match where anything goes, per the Observer. Because it is a Lights Out match, the plan is for this to go on last and for this to end the show because it's technically unsanctioned. And it's not part of the actual show. So the idea is the championship match comes and goes. And I guess Justin Roberts gets on the mic and says, "What you're about to see is not sanctioned by AEW. That portion of the show is now over." I mean, nobody's going to get up and leave, obviously. And then you would put this match on and there would be no rules. Unsanctioned. Be kind of foolish if, you know, there's a referee there. Because if it's not technically a match, why would there be a referee there? I don't know how they're going to work that. But apparently this is going to go on last. I'm going with Jon Moxley. I was kind of wavering on this, especially because I think Omega is the one who eventually is going to take that title from Jericho, I feel. But there's time yet for that to happen. He doesn't have to win here. Moxley, this is the biggest match of his short tenure so far in AEW. He's had a match with on TV with, oh my goodness, Pac. He had another match with, I believe it was Shawn Spears. And he had that match many months ago with Joey Janela. But this is by far the biggest match yet of his AEW run. I think you give Moxley the win. This is his kind of match. This is his environment. No rules, hardcore, anything goes. Weapons, plunder, we're going to see all of it. Tax, probably, all this crazy shit. And I think that he goes over here. Now, this is a match also very long time in the making. This was going to take place at All Out in August. Moxley came down with that MRSA infection. And so it was kind of a blessing in a way because it gave them extra time to really build this match up. And they did that angle on TV a few weeks ago where Moxley DDT'd Omega through this glass coffee table. And they've been going back and forth on TV. So they had extra time to build to this. So, hey, you know, sometimes things work out and it worked out to their favor because now they get to headline this pay-per-view with this match. Now there's three, as I see it, potential matches that have not yet been confirmed, but I think could be very likely to happen on this show. SCU defending the tag team titles against the Lucha Bros in a rematch. I would think there's a pretty good chance that we see that. That would be a rematch from the finals of the tournament. If they do it, I think SCU retains just because they just won them. You know, I don't see them taking them off them so soon. Jake Hager Jake Hager might have a match on this pay-per-view. If so, Dustin Rhodes would be a logical opponent. But he's claiming in this storyline that what happened after the events of Dynamite, he's got a radial fracture in his arm. He's got a broken arm after the attack by Jake Hager. Now, he could work the match in a cast, but they're more likely to hold off on it now. And so the other name that comes to mind is a potential opponent for Hager, and probably an easy win for him. Well, maybe not easy, but a win for him would be Darby Allin. Darby Allin is the one who got screwed over by Hager. He cost Darby Allin possibly the championship in the match with Jericho a few weeks ago. It was his interference. So if they do Hager and Darby Allin, or even Hager and Dustin Rhodes, I think Hager goes over. And then Riho. I would have to think they want Riho to defend her AEW Women's Championship. I just don't know who it would be against. So I really can't, I mean, I could spit names out, but it's not going to be Britt Baker. We already saw that match. So I don't know who it would be, but I would expect there to be a women's title match on the show. And don't forget Wardlow. Don't forget our good friend Wardlow, who has yet to make his debut, but we've seen the videos for him. We know he's coming. Would kind of make sense if he came on the pay-per-view. We'll see. We'll see if he shows up on the show, and if so, what role they put him in. NXT. I feel like I just talked about NXT when I was talking about SmackDown. We had two episodes of NXT this week. We were spoiled. We had 4 hours instead of two. NXT, I thought, killed it again this week on Wednesday. Another great show. Better than Dynamite, and I like Dynamite. So Wednesday night has become the wrestling night of the week without a doubt. Although there are going to be people who just don't like this style of wrestling and they hate everything. They hate AEW. They hate NXT. They hate NXT going to SmackDown and invading and infecting their SmackDown, their beloved SmackDown show. I guess they love SmackDown and Raw so much, these people. Poppy. You heard me last week. I was kind of excited when I heard that Poppy was going to be on the show. Poppy is an enigma to me. I don't quite get her, but I'm fascinated by her, and her music is kind of cool. You know, there's a few songs she has that I like. We had Poppy opening the show. She gave a live performance. She sang Io Shirai to the ring for her match against Candice LeRae. I thought that was very cool. And the two of them had a very good match. Very good match. Io Shirai picks up the win there. We had Finn Balor coming out to cut his first heel promo since attacking Johnny Gargano a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, he talked about Bray Wyatt, the guy who beat him at SummerSlam. Bray Wyatt comes in, he puts a mask on, all of a sudden he becomes the hottest thing in the wrestling business. Well, now he, as in Balor, has taken off his mask. And now he's the hottest thing, or as he says, the hottest ting in the business. I'm sorry, but it's a funny accent to me. I like it, but it's funny. So he says, yeah, there's a lot of opinions going around the locker room, a lot of opinions on social media. He goes, you know, we got people in our locker room who come off more as fans than they do wrestlers. I see Finn Balor has been using a burner account in our Facebook group. He says he heard Johnny Gargano just got out of the hospital. Soon he's going to put him right back into it. He's going to turn Johnny Wrestling into Johnny Watches Wrestling. So I thought this was pretty good. You know, he's going with the idea that, you know, we have guys who work here in this on this brand who have no business being in the ring. They look like they should be sitting in the front row with their ticket. The funny part about that, you could say the same thing about Balor. It's not like Balor is some big jacked up 6'4" looking guy that you see him walking through an airport and you think, hey, there's a pro wrestler, right? You don't think that about him at all. So he kind of fits into the same. Now, granted, he has more abs than most fans would. I mean, look, I have abs too. I have the same abs that he has. It's just that mine happen to be protected by a layer of fat. So there really isn't much of a difference, I guess, between he and I, other than the accent, maybe. But yeah, I did think that was kind of weird, if that's the play that they're going with here, because abs aside, you look at Balor and, you know, how tall is Balor? Is he 6 feet? Probably not even. Probably 5'10", I'm guessing. 5'11". Under 200 pounds. He's not exactly a big boy either. We had the first ever WWE Women's Tag Team title defense at Full Sail. Asuka and Kairi Sane defend against Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox. Lady Kane, as she calls herself. She's a Kanaanite. She's a big Kane mark. She'll be using my Audible link, I'm sure, to pre-order Kane's new book. They had a long match. They gave this match almost, I think it was between 15 and 20 minutes. So there was a lot of, they worked over Tegan and they worked over Dakota and they kind of took their time almost torturing these two women. I said this earlier, I really do love Asuka and Kairi as heels. They've really found their groove. And as the champions, they're giving them time on television. They're putting them on NXT for the first time. They're doing everything right with them so far. They're doing everything right with these two so far. I'm really enjoying it, and I just hope it continues on. So they ended up having a very enjoyable match, and the champions did retain. We had Kairi hitting the insane elbow. This was after Asuka had spit mist in Dakota Kai's face. And so the champions retain their titles. Post-match is when everything broke down. We had women's chaos here on this show. Shayna Baszler came out with her fellow horsewomen. We had Tegan Knox going after Shayna Baszler. Duke, Shafir, they attack. We had Io Shirai coming out with Rhea Ripley. Bianca Belair came out. She went after Rhea. Candice LeRae came out. She was going after Io. And this just mass brawl broke out with all the women. And you can see what I've been saying for weeks now, which is how strong the women's division right now is and how they've recovered from total destruction in NXT. There was a period of time not that long ago where Vince McMahon raided all of the good female talent, practically all the good female talent from NXT, and left Triple H with a shell of what used to be a pretty good division. He had to build this thing back up from the bottom up and bring in new people, train new people at the PC, but now they've put together this division that I think is as strong maybe as it's ever been, certainly since the days of Charlotte and Becky and Sasha and Bayley and all them. You know, you've got Candice, you've got Io, you've got Shayna and the Horsewomen, you've got Bianca, you've got Rhea now. I'm still waiting to see if maybe Toni Storm gets moved over. I don't think they have to right now. They seem to be in pretty good shape. They could probably hold off a little while longer. I'm bringing her in. At some point, I expect to see her at Full Sail too, and she'll get over. She'll be one of the biggest stars in that division. They got Dakota Kai back from her injury. They got Tegan Knox back from her injury. I'm sure they have big things in mind for Tegan because Tegan was the one who originally was going to win the Mae Young Classic before she got hurt. You know, they wouldn't do that with just anybody. And there might even be one or two women I'm just forgetting off the top of my head. So this big brawl is going on. William Regal comes out. He's tired of seeing this. Enough, he says. He said, I have a very simple solution to this. War Games. And everybody went crazy. And so we are, in fact, going to get the first ever women's War Games match at TakeOver in a few weeks. And I'm here for it. I'm ready. This is one of those perfect storm type situations. You know how WWE will have Hell in a Cell every year? It's like, oh, it's October, it's Hell in a Cell, so let's put some Hell in a Cell matches together. And a lot of times, there's no story reason for them to even do that. They just, we have to put two people in the cage. Here, with all of the different, you know, feuds going on between the different women, there's enough of a storyline reason, with all the chaos and all them fighting amongst each other, to say, you know what, there's only one logical way to settle this. We're going to lock you in two rings inside of a cage, and you can just beat the shit out of each other. It's perfect. The timing is perfect. So I'm really happy that we're going to get that. We had Tyler Bate against Cameron Grimes. Pretty good match. We had Killian Dane pop up outside the ring late in the match. He didn't do anything, but he was kind of distracting to Tyler Bate. When Bate got in the ring, Grimes hit that running double stomp of his for the win. I will say this, you know, Cameron Grimes, I'm still not totally sold on him. I can't say that I get overly excited when I see him coming to the ring, but he's got a few pretty damn good matches now under his belt on NXT television. We see him every week. So obviously they really are trying to push this guy hard. I thought they had a very good match. I wouldn't mind seeing them again, to be honest with you. So he's winning me over through his matches. I think at some point he should speak. There's got to be more layers added to his character or to his personality. But he's winning me over through the matches that I see him in every week. And then we had Kyle O'Reilly in the main event against with Bobby Fish against Matt Riddle and Keith Lee. Very good main event. Not a lot of time they gave it, but very good for what it was. And Riddle actually was the one who took the losing fall here. He took the high-low, total elimination. They wiped him out. Adam Cole had come out with Roderick Strong. So that was kind of the distraction that led to the finish and Riddle taking the L for his team. After the match, Undisputed Era, they're going after Keith Lee until Tommaso Ciampa makes the save. He comes out. He's running wild. Lee joins in. Matt Riddle joins in. Ciampa says, Goldie, he went to go pick the title up, and he didn't. He didn't. He stopped short. He said, Goldie, you're going to have to wait. Daddy's going to war. So they haven't officially announced it, but it does look like we're getting a men's War Games match as well. And they'll do two on the same show. So that's what we have to look forward to with the TakeOver show coming up in just a few weeks. I want to run through. We have a lot more to cover here. How long are we into the show here? Are we 2 hours deep? I think we're 2 hours deep. We're almost 2 hours deep here into the show. There's so much to cover. So I'm going to talk about NWA Power here in just a second. We've got a Marks and Smarks edition of RSPW Rewind this week that I think you'll find amusing. I am going to address the Ring of Honor situation because Ring of Honor was in the news, not in a good way this week, thanks to Joey Mercury. I got a whole bunch of mailbag questions about that, so I figure I'll answer it as part of the mailbag. All that coming up, so stick around for that. NWA Power, they did have episode 4 this past week. I got an email from Albert, one of our listeners, with the subject line NWA Power, hence why I'm mentioning that here. He said, after watching NWA Power, this show is great. Oh my God, the old school feel took me back to my childhood. The promos are great and the wrestling is good. The intro brings me back to worldwide wrestling in the NWA in the early 80s. The broadcast team isn't scared or intimidated by the athletes. With Trevor Murdoch, I had a flashback to Dick Murdoch. My hat's off to Billy Corgan for bringing back the NWA. So Albert is very excited, for one, about this NWA revival. I thought this was a better show than the week before. We had James Storm, Colt Cabana, Eli Drake, and Nick Aldis all out at the top of the show, squabbling over who deserves what shot at what title, either the national title or the world's heavyweight title. Eli Drake framed the importance of James Storm's national title as it being the key to getting a crack at the world title, and I like that. It's the way that the Intercontinental title in WWE was always viewed as it was the stepping stone to bigger and better things. And not always for everybody, but for a Bret Hart or a Steve Austin or a Rock or a Shawn Michaels, Chris Jericho. It was the proving ground. It was the stepping stone to an eventual world championship. And so that's how they positioned the national title here. Aldis proposed a six-man tag. It would be his team against James Storm's team. If Aldis's team were to win, Colt Cabana would get a match with Storm to try to get back his national title. And if Storm's team were to win, well, then he would get a shot at the world title. But he would then have to surrender his national title in order to get the shot. And so we had ourselves a main event. And wouldn't you know, they didn't need 20 minutes to announce what was said here in less than 5. Dave Marquez interviewed Trevor Murdoch. He wants to earn an NWA contract. He saw what happened with Josephus and Colt Cabana last week where he threw foot powder in Cabana's face. And he didn't think that he should be suspended for that for 45 days. Instead, he thinks Josephus should face him in a match. I'll do whatever it takes to get a contract, he said. And so did some men in WWE back in the 80s, especially if Paul Roma is to be believed, but that's for another day. Josephus came out. We had a match. Trevor Murdoch against him. Trevor Murdoch against Josephus is the most NWA match that you could possibly envision. Or Memphis or any of those territories from like 30 years ago. Josephus tried to use the powder again. Murdoch kicked the cocaine cloud back into his face. Hit a bulldog from the middle rope and picked up the win. We had Aaron Stevens. He was interrupted by Ricky Starks. Stevens told him that you look ridiculous. Starks slapped him across the face, which led to a match between the two of them later on. Starks told him you talk too much. So someone was looking to get on the next Botchamania, I see. Rock and Roll Express vignette. They are coming back to the NWA. We had the Rock and Roll Express on the NWA show on Tuesday, and then the AEW show on Wednesday, getting their asses kicked by Santana and Ortiz. Back-to-back Ricky and Robert TV appearances for two different promotions in 2019. And Ricky even took a big bump on that Dynamite show. See, now, if I were to say Ricky took a big bump and this were the 1980s, that would have a very different connotation. Here, he took a physical bump on the AEW show. And this is a good time to mention this. The Rock and Roll Express will also be making an appearance at the next House of Glory show here in New York on November 16th. I'll be there. Hopefully you will be too. We could all take bumps with Ricky Morton. The Dawsons beat Eddie Kingston and Homicide in a no disqualification match. The champions, Latimer and Isaacs, they were out there to scout the competition. Latimer then jumped up on the apron. He hit Zane Dawson with the belt to knock him off, but then Isaacs hit a Death Valley driver on Kingston and dragged the other Dawson on top of Kingston to give the Dawsons the win. Weird. But what I make of this is that they don't like either team. They don't like either one of these teams. But they really don't want any of Homicide and Eddie Kingston, so that's why they helped the Dawsons win. Ashley Vox, who lost to Allison Kay a few weeks ago, beat Marty Bell. Thunder Rosa made her debut after the match. She came out to the ring. She extended her hand to Marty when Marty collected herself and got back up to her feet. But Marty blew her off. That was the last we saw of Thunder Rosa. Ricky Starks beat Aaron Stevens from cashing in his Money in the Bank against John Cena to losing to Ricky Starks. It's been an interesting career path for Aaron Stevens. Nick Aldis, Colt Cabana, and Ken Anderson beat Team Storm. Not Tim Storm, Team Storm. Although that would be a funny way of pronouncing Tim Storm's name if you wanted to try to really piss him off. This was good. Cabana wins it for his team using the Superman pin on Latimer. I love that move. That Superman pin where he just dives forward and uses his feet to hook the guy's legs forward. I love that move. And so Colt Cabana will now challenge James Storm for the national title. Just a fun hour of pro wrestling. Very straightforward. Very enjoyable for what it was. I'm still following along. I know some people have said that they're going to give it another week or two and, you know, they might drop off. It's too much wrestling for them or it's not keeping their interest. It's keeping my interest. I don't ask much from my wrestling shows. Don't insult my intelligence. Keep the action flowing. Give me some interesting personalities and characters. You know, give me some good matches every now and then. You put it all together. It's an hour long. It's not 2 hours. It's not 3 hours. So they have the right formula. And I am looking forward to seeing what they have here for Episode 5 coming up this week. It's time for this week's RSPW Rewind. Marks and smarks. Two terms that I hate, but you hear them all the time. You're a mark. Quit being a mark. Oh yeah, you think you know everything. You're a smark. It gets old when you hear it over and over and over again on social media. But these are terms that go back decades. Yes, even smarks. Although years ago you saw less of the word smark and more of the term smart fan. They called them smart fans. And there were a lot of people on RSPW back in the 90s who had no love for the smarks. I thought this week's segment would be dedicated to marks and smarks and some very passionate opinions about that issue, even back 20 years ago or 25 years ago. When you weren't arguing over work rate and backstage politics, you were watching the shows and either loving them or hating them. The debates that you have online today were being held on RSPW every day back then. One person even posted in 2004, Metalhead 3138, with a post titled RSPW in the 60s. He was mocking smart fans, saying things like, "Will San Martino ever job? I'm sick of smarks marking for Joe Brilla Monsoon. Laugh-In equals the most overrated TV show of all time. Will Johnny Weaver ever win the big one? Harley Race equals underappreciated. Not giving Bobo Brazil the strap is racist." So that was posted in 2004, but then we go back in the Wayback Machine to October 24, 1996. Mark Davis started a thread titled Arrogancy of So-Called Smart Fans, and then in parentheses he put you guys. In case it wasn't clear who he was referring to, he felt compelled to clarify that. This is kind of long here, so bear with me. This is not intended to get flames from RSPW or to get heat. It's just my opinion about the attitude of smart fans. It's clear to me that we fans of RSPW seem to think that we are somehow better than other wrestling fans because we know more about the inside workings of the business than other fans. This is apparent by the swiftness that someone on here calls another a mark over and over again when they think that the person knows less than they do. I think that everybody on here is just as much of a mark as anyone else, and there's no need to be arrogant about how much you think you know. I get the feeling people on here think that they know everything about how wrestling works, but this is foolish. In my view, if you are not directly in the business, then you aren't any smarter than the rest of the fans. After a WWF house show in Chicago, I had the opportunity to talk to Shawn Michaels for about 10 minutes. One of the things I asked him about was the sheets or the newsletters. He said regarding the sheets, we let them know what we want them to know. I take that a step further by saying that the same applies about so-called smart fans. They think they know everything, but they only know little more than the marks. But when it comes down to it, smart fans really don't know much. They too are being worked just as much as the marks, but at least the marks don't have this arrogancy about them that they know it all. Take ECW, for example. I love reading when people talking about the whole ECW-WWF angle talk about how Paul E. would never work with the WWF because he hates them. That just goes to show how much these people are Paul E. marks because they believe anything he says. Or I'll hear Gary Wolfe, Pitbull number one, is legit hurt. This is not a work. No way! Now, I'm not saying that Pitbull's injury was a work or not. I don't know. That's not the point. The point is that for somebody not in the business to be so sure that it was a legitimate injury is the sign of a mark. Those in ECW Arena marked out when Shane Douglas attacked an injured Pitbull and were outraged. These are just a couple of examples of an arrogancy by smart fans, many who frequent RSPW, who think they know it all. Here's my advice. Enjoy the matches. Don't shout out the wrestlers' real names thinking you know everything. Don't antagonize other fans for being marks or make fun of them for liking wrestlers who have bad work rate or something silly like that. Everybody has their own tastes and respect that. Don't think that you're better than them. When it comes down to it, you are just as much of a mark as they are. So that is from Mark Davis. Ironically, his name is Mark. I mean, what the fuck are the chances of that? His name is Mark Davis. E. Rowe replied, saying, an actual intelligent posting. I did not think people like you existed on here. Jeff Amdor says, we are all marks. There is nothing more disgusting than going to a house show and hearing some jerk yell out stuff that could ruin it for the true believers. What the hell kind of sadistic pleasure does one get out of doing that? As much as I can't stand Hulk Hogan or The Warrior and will bash them in this news group, there's no way I'm going to yell, no Selwig, at the guy at a live show. I'll boo, and if I'm asked why am I booing, I can give a he sucks kind of answer, but the last thing anybody wants to hear at a live show is a comment that will disillusion a fellow fan. I may never respect Hogan or his lack of work rate, but I'll never present that as anything more than an opinion. I'll never show disrespect to those I disagree with. There is good reason why Molaire did not stage his Les Misanthropes in a wrestling arena setting. Well, now he's just gone over my head here with these references. But we have a rare show of solidarity here on RSPW. And then Con McIntosh has to come along and ruin it. This is what he says. Well, now that nearly everybody on RSPW has bent over backwards to kiss this guy's ass, I just have to point out that there is no such word as arrogancy. Arrogancy, by the way, is recognized as a word by Webster's Dictionary. Just as an aside, maybe it wasn't in 1996 when this post was made, but it is today. Which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because I would think that you could just use the word arrogance. Right? I mean, there's a reason Rick Martel didn't call his spray bottle arrogancy. Because that would have sounded stupid. March 20th, 1997, another user named KK, thankfully there's only two, wrote a post titled Smart Fans. To those of you who think you're smart fans, I say you're all a bunch of marks. That is why you're a fan. There are no smart fans, only marks. Fan equals mark, period. You all watch what we do, but the fact is you still remain absolutely clueless as to how the business actually works. There is so much that goes on that you dorks don't even know about. It's ridiculous. If you're not in the business, you just don't understand how it works, and you never will. Smark equals mark. RSPW equals jerk-offs. Then we had a post by Zoogs Rift, the Liquid Moammo. I have no fucking idea what that means. He did not like KK's post. He did not take very kindly to KK's post, as evidenced by his reply here. His reply, by the way, should have come labeled with a rated R label. So just be aware of that. You arrogant, dumb fuck piece of human dog shit. Boy, don't you love when a post starts out like that? What you say is absolutely true. I know it because I worked in the business in numerous capacities for a number of years. But your stupid, condescending, arrogant attitude makes you too a mark. A mark of the worst kind. An RSPW mark. You don't even use your real name. Well, goddammit, I'm Zoogs Rift. The fucking Liquid Moammo, more fucking hardcore than your granny's best boner. And I'm in RSPW all the time. Why, you might ask? Because I fucking feel like it, that's why. I regard all the people in here as the fine, wonderful children I never had. And I enjoy watching them grow and develop into fine, outstanding, responsible, inventive men and women planting the seeds of achievement into the wind, spreading peace, joy, and psycho-aquatic happiness throughout the universe. So I say unto you, Mr. or Ms. Hotshot, fuck you! Fuck you, fuck you, fuck thee. Fuck brethren and sethern of ye pro wrestling upper crust. You are not even worthy of being called crust. You are just one of the crumbs. Ha ha! Take that, anus breath. You stink like a fucking pig. You got that dinky doodles? Pig! Do you hear me? Shut your filthy puke-ridden face before I have to come over there and shut your feces breath yap for you. I thank you for your time. I think it's the I thank you for your time at the end that got me the most when I first read this post. Very respectful at the end, right? It's all about how you close. He closed in a very respectful way. KK says, hey peckerhead, why don't you get a straw and suck a fart out of my ass, you worthless proletarian piece of human pus? People like you are the ones responsible for the bad name of RSPW. Yes, oh yeah. People like Zoogs are the problem with RSPW, not the guy who just told somebody to suck a fart out of his ass. Oh my god. This is what was going on in 1997. We move on to April 12, 1997. Hazmat. Hazmat posted, the problem with being a smart fan. That was the title of his post. As I think of what is bad, he says, about being smart fans, it reminds me of a time when I enjoyed wrestling, when I was young. Not knowing what would happen next on the wrestling programs, as I would anticipate the shows every week. Nowadays, that's called being a mark. But as you look back at the times that you were a mark, it makes you realize how much more fun wrestling was. What was once a place of pleasure and a hobby of yours has now almost become a burden. Always wanting to know what will happen ahead of time, which angles will happen, who will have what belt. As you do realize that you were more of an investigator doing work than you are a genuine fan. When you look at Japanese wrestling and Mexican wrestling, and then you come onto the internet, and you realize that those American fans who watch Japanese and Lucha, who follow these promotions, seem to be more concerned about showing off how much they know, as if they're in a competition with other smart fans. It makes you think, do they really like Japanese wrestling, or are they only trying to impress us with how much they know? Peter Ransom then replies, couldn't agree more with smarks trying to impress everybody with their knowledge. I was at the ECW summer convention last year, and all of the internet fans, all they did during the Chris Jericho Sabu match was call all of the moves. I thought this was really sad and pathetic. I know more names of moves than most, but I didn't shout out, whoa, acai moonsault. They actually spoiled their own enjoyment by trying to impress everybody and not just appreciating the moves. The highlight, though, had to be the supposed Smarks, who claimed that Jericho bladed his nose. That's a new one to me. I've not heard that one before. There's a lot to be said against some smart fans. Lots of people think they're smart on here, but they are not. Fast forward 1 year to April 19th, 1998, the night of the WCW Spring Stampede pay-per-view, and a post by Guy B titled, "God, You People Are Ridiculous." All the people saying there was no angle development are full of shit. Raven winning the US title, Hogan attacking Nash, Savage winning the belt. What the fuck do you call that? I think that's plenty of angle development. Oh, I give up. WCW puts out a pay-per-view with real surprises and good matches, and you still bitch about it. They actually shake things up like everybody says they should, and people fucking whine still. There's something wrong with all of you fucking people. WrestleMania has to be the most overrated pay-per-view ever. And yet a real good show comes along and you people slam it. Internet fans don't know shit about wrestling. Just fuck you all. Wow. Very angry post by Guy B. EBR replies, he says, take one Prozac and post again in the morning. And in the OP's defense, in the original poster's defense, in scrolling down, Guy did post something of an apology later on, which is pretty rare on the internet. He said, sorry about this. My point still stands, but I got a little carried away. And going over the post, it seems that most people were positive. Heh, sorry. I promise it will never ever happen again. And then on December 2nd, 1998, Devlin Rink made a post titled, "How many smart fans does it take to screw in a light bulb?" The answer? Zero. They'd never screw in a light bulb because they'd be convinced that it was all a work. Number one, Scotty Riggs Mark on the Net replies. Takes a lot of courage to have a name like that. He says, personally, I wouldn't screw it in yet. I want to see if General Electric will match the 5-year, $4 million contract that I've already gotten with Sylvania. Spoken like a true wrestling fan. As you can see, this Marks versus Smarks debate has been going on for a lot longer than you may think. And now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go see if that Spring Stampede show really was as good as Guy B says it was. But first, some mailbag questions. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Eamon from Zurich, the new Raw commentator Dio Madden, has been on air for a couple weeks now. I personally like him because of him being such an anime fan, his name being a reference to JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And as we all know, wrestling is just anime for rednecks. What do you think of Dio Madden? I like Dio. He plays the role they want him to play. I don't find him grating the way that I do some of their other announcers. The problem with the announcers is that they don't get the chance to really show off any of their personalities the way that announcers used to be able to do. I name-dropped Jesse Ventura earlier, one of the best. Just this great personality and the chemistry he had with Monsoon and the chemistry with Vince McMahon. He was constantly ragging on Vince, talking about his toupee, and Lawler would do the same thing. But the days of announcers like Jesse Ventura, Jerry Lawler, Bobby Heenan, I'm talking about the Lawler of 20 or 25 years ago, not the Lawler of today, they had personalities that they amplified or played up in a way that made them very entertaining and did not detract from the show. More often than not, it added to the show. I mean, Lawler could be grating, especially with the women sometimes. It could be very annoying and just kind of creepy, to be honest with you. But Lawler back in the mid to late 90s, when he was cracking jokes and he was really not holding back, could be very entertaining. Bobby Heenan, the best of all time. Jesse Ventura, maybe the second best of all time in that color role. And it's almost like, when did that stop? When did that stop? It's not as though there aren't people with talent. It's not as though they don't have people out there who are genuinely funny. When did that era come to an end where we just don't have any of that anymore? What changed? These people had personalities of their own that helped lift the show and weren't stifled by the show. Vic Joseph, you know, Dio Madden, all of them, I can't say they do anything to really add to the show. So what do? They call the action. They come out of the commercial breaks. They're all standing next to each other. They're hyping up lame stories that don't resonate a lot of the time, which isn't their fault. But I also can't say they do anything to get me more excited about these stories when I'm watching the show. So, I mean, Dio's fine in the role so far. He's still very new at this. He got thrown right into the fire. And I'm not exactly clamoring to get Corey Graves back on Raw. So I would consider that to be a good thing. John from Baltimore, buy or sell on the more interesting WWE feud that could have happened in 1996 but never did. Diesel against Vader or Mankind against the Ultimate Warrior? Wow, imagine that. Imagine Mankind feuding with the Ultimate Warrior in 1990. I got to vote on that. I got to buy on that and sell on Diesel and Vader. I mean, Diesel and Vader would have been an interesting big man matchup, but probably very slow in plotting. Maybe not very exciting. Mankind and the Warrior, though, it's almost like that would either be really, really bad or could turn out to just blow people away and be a hell of a lot more entertaining than anybody would give it any right to be. And the promos, I mean, Warrior was cutting promos on Goldust in 96, you know, calling him, using curse words and saying some stuff I won't repeat here. It was a very different Ultimate Warrior than the one that we had in the early 90s. That version of the Warrior against that evil, you know, Mankind character. And the matches. I don't know what an Ultimate Warrior Mankind match would have looked like. I can't even imagine in my brain, like, what kind of match would the two of them have had? What would the Warrior have been willing to go along with? I mean, we know Mankind would have taken all the abuse in the world. So I'm sure he would have bumped his ass off to try to make it a great match, but I can't even envision in my head what a match like that would have even looked like. For that reason, I would have loved to have seen it. I got to buy on that. Harrison, one of our PayPal VIPs, had a buy or sell I wanted to sneak in here. He's from Boston, and there have been three Survivor Series shows held in Boston, 1993, 2008, and 2013. Buy or sell on the better Survivor Series pay-per-view, 2008 or 2013. Aha. See, he was smart enough not to include 1993 because that's the one I would have bought on. For Bobby Heenan's commentary alone during the Hearts against Shawn Michaels and the Knights. I don't know. I don't even know that Harrison was born when that pay-per-view took place. That's probably why he didn't include it. 2008 or 2013. 2008 had a main event of John Cena. I think he had just come back from neck surgery, challenging Chris Jericho for the World Heavyweight title. The 2013 show is the one that had that awful Big Show Randy Orton main event. So hard sell on 2013, and just by default, I have to buy on 2008. But if you open that up to 93, I'm buying on 93. And we'll end with a non-wrestling question. He tried to get this in for Halloween last week and didn't make it. I wanted to include it here. Jacob from Springfield, Missouri, wants to know my thoughts on the Saw movies, if I have a favorite one, and my thoughts on Saw 9, which is due out next year with Chris Rock and Samuel L. Jackson. Well, Chris Rock and Samuel L. Jackson seem like a very odd fit for a Saw movie. I love Samuel L. Jackson, though, so I might see it. The thing is, I have not seen a Saw film since the fourth one. So there have been eight, right? If this is nine, I assume there have been eight. Yeah, I saw the first four. I've only seen the first half of the Saw movies. I've seen clips of some of the torture traps in the later movies, but I just lost interest. You get to a point where these things are so dark and so gory. Even I have my limits. It just, you get to a dark place sometimes where I do feel like a lot of horror fans, and maybe you can relate, maybe not, you kind of reach this point where you almost feel guilty about liking that genre, and you just have this one moment where you think to yourself, what the hell's wrong with me? Why am I watching this? Like, what does it say about me? I think, like, maybe I need to dial it back a little bit. And that's where I kind of tapered off with the Saw films. I mean, look, some of the traps are very creative and very innovative. I wish some of the people who come up with the saw traps would write WWE television. My favorite one, it's got to be the original. It's got to be the original movie, the first one. I thought it was a novel concept for a movie. And with that little twist, well, not so little, but with that twist at the end, I didn't see it coming. I should have. I feel like I should have seen that coming, and I didn't. And that just made it so much better. So I like the first one the most. Of all the traps that I saw from these movies, the one that got to me the most, I don't know if I can call it my favorite, because it creeps me out just thinking about it. And look, you're talking about traps. People's limbs are being twisted and ripped off, and people have to, like, do things that you would never, ever want to have to think about doing. And it's all in the name of, you know, live or die, make your choice. It's about this killer who's not really a killer, as he points out, because all he's doing is giving you the tools to kill yourself or kill somebody else. But he's putting them in a position where, do you value life? And if so, how much do you value your life? What are you willing to do to survive? That's the whole idea behind Jigsaw and his sort of mentality. But of all the traps that I've seen, the one that I found to be the most disturbing is from the second movie, from Saw 2, The Pit of Needles. I hate needles. I don't know too many people who like needles. I didn't even like Needles the character in the Back to the Future movies. I don't like needles. And that guy threw a junkie. He threw this girl into a pit full of dirty syringes just because a key fell in there. And he wanted her to go fish out the key so they can get out of this room that they were trapped in. So he picked her up and threw her down into this pit of dirty syringes. And they're sticking out of her skin. Oh, 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 I can't even think about it. So that's the one that really skeeved me out the most of all the different ones that I saw. The one next year, we'll see. I have to see the trailer first. I don't know if there's a teaser out yet for it. Apparently, Chris Rock is not just starring in it. He's writing the movie. Chris Rock writing a Saw movie is a very strange choice. I don't know if that means there's going to be comedy elements to it, which would definitely not be like any Saw movie that I've ever seen. We'll see. I'll keep an open mind. We'll see. Keep emailing me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. And again, don't forget, you can pre-order the new Kane book. Glenn Jacobs, his new book is coming out at the end of the month. You can pre-order it right now for free using our Audible link, audibletrial.com/solemonster. Get a 30-day trial. The book, at this point, what's today? November 3rd. Some people might want to wait until next week and then activate the trial. That's up to you guys. But you can sign up now. Get the book for free. Kane narrates it himself, all 7 hours plus. You can get a free book here, courtesy of The Sound Off. I will see you back live on YouTube Wednesday night for my AEW Dynamite stream. Next Saturday, I'll be live on YouTube after the Full Gear pay-per-view. That whole weekend really is our 12-year anniversary weekend. That technically is the 12-year anniversary next weekend, so that'll also bleed over into episode 625 of the podcast next Sunday. Thank you all who have been with me for, in some cases, the full 12 years. Even the ones who have only been listening for 6 months or a year. Everybody who supports the show in any way, thank you very much. Here's to 12 more, if I can last, if I can survive. And bigger and better things coming up in 2020. So until next weekend, be well, stay safe, enjoy your first week of November, and I will see you back here for more Sound Off real soon. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solemonster Sounds Off.
Kofi Kingston goes from losing the championship 1 week to just smiling and chucking pancakes into the crowd the next. But this is everything that is wrong with the way the WWE treats their titles. It has been this way for years. John Cena made an Olympic sport out of coming out the next night after losing his championship and acting like he wasn't bothered by it at all. So why should it bother Kofi Kingston, I guess, right? Cena would be on TV cracking jokes about it. And my attitude is, and has always been, if he don't care, why should I?
The Solemonster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolemonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow The Solemonster on Twitter at Solemonster.
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 Put that cigarette out.
Solemonster Sounds Off.